I'm in a New York state of mind. Just you up in my love, all over your body. Hey now, don't dream it's over. That's how to keep you. We're gonna turn and work.
Hello, welcome to Blue Chat, episode 72. Long time since you've heard all of our voices, so... Hope you enjoy hearing a brand new host for this episode. I'm Mitch, actually, not John, just in case your brain was a little bit confused in the beginning. And with me, I have quite the collection of co-hosts. I will start off with Natalie. Natalie, how are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you today, Mitch?
Oh, thank you for asking. I feel like no one ever asks the host. I'm doing good.
tell us about your day.
Well, So as we go through, I'd love to give everyone like a bullet point update on something cool and new in our life. And since Natalie asked me, I'll tell everyone a cool thing of my life. I got a job at GameStop, so I'll get cheap video games. That's kind of fun.
Ooh, cool.
Yeah. So Natalie, what's going on?
I don't know exactly what GameStop is, but I assume it's a gaming shop.
Natalie, yes. It's like AB Games here.
Okay. Yep. Fair. Yeah. Got you.
Okay. So Natalie, right. Tell me what's going on with your fox. That's what I want to hear about.
Oh, she's okay. She's fat and lazy. For those who follow us over on Teen Wolf podcast will know all about the fox, because it's been Fox Central on Teen Wolf lately. But
yes.
On Glee, there's not much call for conversations about foxes with Glee. So for those who don't know, we are looking after a rescued fox that was rescued as a baby and is now a tame fox. And her family who looked after her had to go... away, they had to move, and we have her, and she just, right now she's hanging out on our outside table. She's decided she likes to sit up high, so she just sits on the table, and we had to move a blanket there for her because she was just like sitting on the wood and like being uncomfortable but not moving. So she's very fat and very lazy and very like needy, so she's quite funny, but she's good.
Sweet. Okay, so Jack, you have started university, so that's like the major thing in any teenager's life, I'd say, to start college and move out of their house. What does it feel like to be podcasting in your very own dorm room?
It's good. I can sort of be a bit louder now because I'm a bit further away from, like when I was at home, my family were always really close, like, because we had a smaller house. But now there's, like, my room, like, in a sort of hall, and then you can close the door down in the lounge room and the kitchen and all that, but I'm right at the end of the hallway, so I can be as loud as I want now.
Nice.
Are you in a share house, Jack, or an
like
actual
the way
university one?
It's like on campus, yeah. So I'm like sharing the house with six other people, but it's on the campus at the university.
Yeah. I know what you mean. In Australia, we don't have as many people that come to live at the university. When you usually go to one within your vague area, so a lot of people actually live at home while at university, or if they do move out, they often move into just like a rented share house like you have now, Mitch. But a few universities, for the small amounts of people that do want to come and live on campus, they have those university organized share accommodation, as opposed to like dorms in the way that you guys have in America.
Interesting. I didn't. You guys always introduced me to so many different and new things that I did not know about Aussies. I'm just always very interested to know that there's like many more differences than just like, you know, the accents or the way we speak or something like.
the thing with like where I am is that my house is like 2 hours down south. So I moved up to Perth, and then like pretty much on campus, there's like a few like housing areas from the university. But where I am, like they kind of put all rural students, regional students together. So like in where I am, there's a lot of people either from like who live far away because they need a place to stay, or like overseas, like a lot of like Asian and like we have a few Americans here. Yeah, cause, like, it's mainly.
Well, that's funny. You know what? I didn't
it's mainly
have any.
I can't study at home.
All right, but I didn't have any Australian people in my college in America, maybe because it was too small. So that's interesting that you guys have American classmates. But so we can introduce, I suppose, the most exciting of our co-hosts today. I want to, because we're nothing. We're chopped liver compared to Kyle.
No, shut up.
Kyle, as known as the host of the Orphan Black podcast. Also, he is a co-host on Hype.
Last time I was here, it was Tark.
Tark, it was his was his name before, but now he's Kyle.
But a la American Horror Story, surprise bitch, bet you thought you saw the last of me.
Bet you did. And Vampire Hype and Book Hype. Kyle just does a lot of podcasting. So since Kyle does so much podcasting, we decided, hey, he's over at Mitch's house. Let's just, you know, jump
him
on
the chat. Right now.
He is petting my hair, and it's actually kind of creepy. But
you can't call it Mitch's house if he lives there, too.
Yeah, well, he's only
living... Oh, no, I don't live here. I have, I didn't buy my own place, but I have my own place. But I don't have a bed, and so since parents,
you just came down to Southern California.
Exactly,
I
had Disney training today, so I'm officially a Disney cast member. But my parents are bringing me a bed on Tuesday.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So did you get like your own apartment for one person or
No? So Pam from Hypable and I were apartment hunting, and we found a place, but she decided not to take it because they have a cat and she is a dog, and so I get my own room now, and it's great.
Okay, cool. Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah, so Kyle decided to stay down with me, of all people, right? I know. It's a small, hypeable world.
Got a job at Disneyland right across the street from Mitch.
Yes.
Okay, I need to know something about you, Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that Disney people are not allowed to reveal too much, but...
We have our rights.
You said that you used to do this. You've done this before.
Yes.
Was it at Disneyland or was it like a Disney store?
No, it was at Disney World. At Disney World, I did the college program. The college program
in Florida.
It allows college students, actually anywhere all over the world, they have an international college program too. Is you can work at Disney World for quote unquote college credit.
As a cashier, though.
So weird.
It's very weird.
And like you can opt out of earning the college credit part and just work full time. So most people just work full time and they live in college housing with a whole bunch of all other college kids. And so it's just a bunch of teenagers and like young adults like partying and working at Disney. And it's great. But this time I'm actually an adult working at Disney. So it's different.
So if you guys haven't figured it out by now, my life is pretty much surrounded around Disney. Like, I have 0% of my life that is not related to Disney. It's kind of creepy.
Hasn't it always been?
It has, but, like, not to this extent. Like, I mean, I just feel like everyone I know and everything I do has to always center back to this one Anaheim Disneyland location. It's really weird. So,
Wait, what's the difference between Disneyland and Disney World?
I want to keep on. I want to get into the Glee recap. Yeah. So, I know people are dying for that.
Disney World is 5 million times bigger.
Yes,
basically.
Yes.
It has there a lot go. Of different parks.
It's the same size as the city of Manhattan. It's if not bigger. It's like the land acre wise. Yeah, is the same.
Disney World is a gigantic thing. Like you couldn't do it in like a day. If you really made an effort, you could do Disneyland in a day.
Yeah.
Disney World, you'd need like a week and a half. Like,
yeah.
I haven't been there, but it's people go there for a 2 week vacation just to Disney World.
The concept is that there are two
crazy
two parks for Disneyland right on the same property. There are four or five Disney World, Kyle?
There's six. Like two water parks, four theme parks.
Okay, so there's six parks in Disney World. That gives you the depth of how much bigger they are. And
but
one of them is probably the size
they're also bigger than the ones at Disneyland.
Right, and the individual parks themselves are also bigger than the ones in Disneyland. So wrap that all together and you have a whole bunch more Disney than you ever cared to know about. Yes. All right, guys, so back to our
I've never been to Disney World.
This is the Disney podcast,
This
right?
is not a Disney podcast. Oh. This is a Glee podcast, but we're rehashing Glee episode 509, Frenemies. All right, guys, so we jump into the episode when Artie is singing Whenever I Call You Friend. Jack, if I remember correctly, you're a pretty big fan of Artie. What do you think of this performance?
I'm not a huge fan of... Well, I mean, I'm indifferent towards Artie, but it actually starts out with Rachel and Santana in the cafe.
Oh,
I was going to mention before, they were talking, and they were talking about how Santana apologized for being mean in high school and that she was running the bitch parade against Rachel.
Right, yeah, that happened too, and I guess that's more important than the song, so we can concentrate more on that. But yeah, basically, Santana just apologizes to Rachel for being so mean before, and she commends Rachel for being so cool as a cucumber during her Funny Girl run. And I think that that still holds true somewhat in this scene, just by the fact that Rachel still is determined to work at the restaurant when she knows she could get quite the paycheck from being a Broadway star. Obviously, yeah. That's going to be our A-plot for the episode, because it's the first major drama introduced. So I guess you can expect by the word frenemies being in the title of the episode, yeah. Things aren't going to go too well. So Natalie, just before we go into what happens with those two girls, do you think Santana was justified in doing... I guess in apologizing to Rachel right when she did, or was it just kind of, it was weird.
I have a lot of thoughts about the Rachel and Santana thing that happened in this episode, because honestly, I don't think either of them were particularly justified in their behavior, but I have like literally a big paragraph written about this, which is probably more appropriate towards the end, but I will say to start with, I think it's nice that Santana apologized, but I think her guilt is misplaced. Because I think that Rachel cared about not being liked in high school, but some of the stuff she said later, I don't think she's right. I don't think Santana is right about the hate being the thing that drove Rachel, if you know what I mean. I think Rachel always thought she was the shit and that she was deluded to the point of delusion, and she probably got to high school and was like shocked that people didn't like her. And I think that the way that they did torment her wasn't what drove her with
I think it
her
drove
success.
Her a little bit, at least.
I think that was a separate issue that she dealt with. I think that you see a lot of Rachel as a child, as what she was like in a child in flashbacks, and I think that she would have been like that either way, and that she did that stuff like in spite of all of that hate, not because of it. So I think that Santana's carrying around all that guilt that Rachel barely even thinks about. I think she thinks about it way more than Rachel, and that it was really it's misplaced guilt. But I have sort of more about this with actually what they ended up saying to each other later. Yeah,
we'll save it more onto that part. But Jack, if you had to take a side, I don't want to say that though. If you were Santana, would you feel the need to apologize to Rachel for being mean at this rate? Or would you think that it's completely up to Rachel to decide her own fate, and she knew she was going to be a star, wasn't driven by jealousy?
I think that her guilt is sort of what you said, Natalie. Like, it is a bit misplaced, but I think it's guilt that she's been holding on for way too long. Like, I think it was sort of more in the past, and that if she's thinking about it way too much, she's not thinking about it in the right way. And I also think that, like, pretty much that exactly what you said, Natalie. Rachel, we see flashbacks of her dancing, like, in the choir room. She says that she was, like, singing, like, when she was a baby, like, all that kind of stuff. But I also don't think that the show was trying to make a point that Santana, Quinn, and Brittany's bitchiness to her in high school was what drove her to her success. And I think that maybe Santana might think that a tiny bit, but I think the show was actually meant. Yeah,
I don't think that we, as the audience, are meant to believe that. I think Santana's trying to convince herself that because she's trying to, like, justify her jealousy.
Oh, I see. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
All right, that's like, fair enough. Yeah. And I can see where you're coming from, Natalie. That's a really good point for that. And, well, I mean, we'll save more of a conversation for what Santana does. Right. She does more with that guilt, or perhaps not her guilt, but her jealousy. And we'll decide what it is later on in the events that transpire. Okay. So then it is revealed that Tina and Artie are both valedictorians with perfect attendance. Sue mentions that Glee Club members who come and go for months at a time are very common. You know, once again, lampshading, in my opinion, too much toward the whole Joe sugar. And I mean, I know you're a big fan of the lampshading, Natalie. That's fine.
No. I think that they do lean on it too. They lean on it too much as humor. But I think because Glee's been off so much, I'd forgotten about it. Because I found this really amusing, because I think Sue is the best when she's the, like, voice of the audience. If they just have Sue do it, it's okay. It's dumb when they have literally everyone do it. But when it's Sue, like, really sarcastically, like, pointing out all of this stuff that's it comes across funny because it actually does suit her character. I liked this scene way more than their song scene, even though they sounded good together, because that song was really, like, it was, like, such a, like, crap segue into it. Like, it was so awkward, like, how it just started. Yeah. But
no, it totally was, and I agree.
I agree with what you said, Natalie, but I also think that the show is starting to rely on that humor too much with Sue.
Yeah.
Like, fair enough if she says it, but it seems like every second joke she makes is them lampshading how, like, their mistakes in the past, and that's it starts to get on my nerves a bit. But I also think that if they're going to do it, they should stick with Sue doing it, because when Tina said to Artie, she actually said, you know, that was a really lame segue into the song. She says that. Well, then why do you make the lame segue? Why don't you just make it a better segue and don't mention good. It?
That's what a lot of people have said. You can't use humor about how bad you are to cover up the fact that you're bad, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it doesn't make it better. Yeah.
You can't do it. Like, but yeah, they could just make it better instead of making jokes about how crap it is.
Yeah, and you know what? Especially,
like, literally right after you've just made the mistake. Like,
yeah, there's actually a lot of stuff about the performances, and I felt it about a few of them in this episode. I feel like Glee used to have performances come up much more naturally than they do now. It would be someone performing, you know, there would be an assignment, and yes, it was a bit repetitive, but there would be an assignment, and then a few people would come back and present their song for that assignment. They'd go off and do some preparation, they'd come back, present their song. Now it's just like they hit it and they sing immediately, or they sing for no reason. There's lots of opportunities where people could be singing a song in rehearsals, or in you know, either Rachel's rehearsals or the band rehearsals, or in Glee Club, or they could get together and agree, hey, can we try practicing this song? It's a bit weird to me that they just sing for no reason now. And I feel like, I know Glee has always had slight singing for no reason, but I feel like it's increased. I don't know if anyone else thinks that, but I feel
it
like
has,
it used to be.
To a certain extent.
There used to be better reasons for performances, if you know what I mean.
No, I get where you're coming from, and I'm thinking back to season one's not really even a fair caliber to this anymore, but like Rachel's how about a round of applause when she was mad at Finn. Like, that was really meaningful, and even though that's, to me, is in general just like whatever, a so-so pop song, Glee turned it into a great storytelling moment. But Glee doesn't tend to do that anymore. They tend to shove whatever song they think is going to just semi-fit the situation, but also move the plot along because they're too lazy to write a transition.
Well, I mean, that's
kind of... Well, they do it to an extent.
This is sort of jumping ahead a bit because but it is still part of the same plot, and I'd like to sort of go to that and then go back to Rachel. But, you know, we have Tina, you know, when Tina and Artie do that competition song, when, so, you know, later on Mr. Shu's like, we have to, you know, you guys can have a sing-off for it and try, you know, try out right here, right now. And then they go into the song. Okay, not even going to talk about the fact that that's literally the worst song in the world in order to show off people's voices. It's pretty much spoken.
Yeah.
They don't sing. Putting that to one side... Do you remember when Kurt and Rachel had the sing-off with Defying Gravity in season one? They both went away. They got told about it. They went away and practiced, and then they came back and did it. Like, is that hard? Yeah. Like, it's really... So I found it really weird that he's like, right now, we're just going to psychically tell the band and hit it, and they know what song it's going to be, and really, like, losing the realistic aspect, which, I mean, it was never the most realistic show, but I wish that they put as much effort into it as they used to.
I mean, it lost the realistic aspect from the beginning. Like, the first Fall pilot that they had was an actual, like, almost a cappella, barely any autotune, and now it's gone to the point where they go, oh, look, there's a band, let's play a song. Oh, everyone knows it.
Yeah.
It's great.
Like, they even read sheet music for Gold Digger back when Mercedes was doing that. Like, that was legit, you know?
If you go and watch season one, you see them hand out sheet music, like a lot of the times when they're playing.
And
which is good. It should be like that.
If they're all musicians, and if they're songs they know quite well, they would be able to, you know, practice something from the sheet music pretty immediately. But
not to the extent that they do. I mean, I guess
no, but it was still
has to
more
give, right.
They, it was still more realistic. Like,
it's well, the way, it's the just way a parody of itself, like
yeah,
just ultimately, and it's lame. It sucks. not the show, but like the fact that it's become
Kyle's
a parody.
Not officially on this podcast. No. Just
ignore it. No, not the show. I'm like saying that the fact that it's become a parody of itself so frequently, like with what yeah, with I what you said about this. Like the lines and the awkward segue and everything.
Joking
like it just
about their own mistakes,
it,
yeah.
It sucks that like it's become such a parody to the point where fans have just accepted that they're parodying themselves.
Right, but yeah, well, it's like all the effort goes right into just creating these moments where they make fun of themselves, as opposed to, like Natalie was saying, creating legitimate transitions or, you know, introducing the song to the story in a better way. But they just kind of stopped caring about that, and they're like, you know what? It's almost like Lee is handing over treason. It's still like, we know that we just can't write as well as we did in season one. We're not going to even try anymore. We're going to make fun of ourselves until the day we die.
Yeah, that, no, I think they've try. The problem with it is that it's the problem with Glee at the moment is that it's fallen in a formula of itself. Like I remember watching Puppet Master, and it just seemed like I was watching fan fiction. Like
I loved Puppet Master. I thought it was it was so it was a it was a complete joke. But I thought it was different in a way. But yeah, I do know what you mean. It was like, this is crack. Like, I can't believe that this has happened. If
it's
you know what I mean.
It's like, just like, it's a little things. Like, even in this episode, like, I was, when Unique just like said, I mean, I really love Unique, but when she just said that one little thing, I was just watching it. Yeah, just like, it was such a formula that they always have used. And now I'm watching it and the joke wasn't like funny. And it just seems like a fan has written it and they've just, you know.
Well, is like, what's great is that they have the opportunity to change that when they all go to New York. They're not going to be in high school anymore. They're not going to have this band off in their side room. They're going to have like actual rehearsal rooms and people. And like, they're not, Unique won't transfer over because she's not part of it.
They're essentially killing off, like, five characters.
But, like, I think going to college, they will be able to make the show more serious and actually not do so many of this.
They're forcing themselves to reinvent themselves, which they need to do.
Yeah, that's very true. And it's already always felt a bit like that with New York. With a lot of the Kurt and Rachel scenes in New York, it's kind of felt like a different show. It's felt like a different tone. Felt like different writing, and I was a little bit disappointed to see that a few of the musical numbers in New York are kind of becoming a bit less realistic as well. Like a lot of the musical numbers so far in New York have been quite well done in terms of realism, because whatever Kurt and Rachel can sing at home, that's fine. The diner where they work is a singing diner. If they want to break into song, it's actually part of their job. They put karaoke songs on and sing. It's part of what that job does and everything else. But there were I actually liked the New York numbers in this episode, but at least two of them were like, that's kind of McKinley style unrealisticness and oh well. But we can move on to that, because one of those was Brave at the photo shoot that Rachel and, you know, bring Santana to be a part of
the
photo
shoot. I
love
that number. That number was fantastic.
I loved it looked, so much.
I think it looked incredible. Like the choreography and the sound, it was... Like, it just looked and sounded so good. It was totally unnecessary, but it looked so lovely.
Well, as unnecessary as you may say it seems, Natalie, I think that it is necessary in that it did look good, because this is Glee using its facets at 10,000%. It's forming itself to be a very Broadway show, no longer about just doing maybe even like show tunes in the choir room. It's about doing choreography and a performance and costumes and makeup and all the stuff. And it's amazing when it all comes together. It makes you feel like we're watching it on a Broadway stage. And those moments where we kind of just show one shot as opposed to the action shots, you know, where they close up.
See, I agree, but I disagree, because I feel like I agree in that it was necessary, but not because it was to show how good they can do a number, but I think it was necessary from Santana's point of view. Like, she just wanted to be kind of like brave. Like she just wanted to get herself out there, and that was kind of your insight into her mind. Like, yeah, like, she can be really pratty and do, like, really ridiculous things to Rachel and her friends and everything, but, like, it was a really deep insight into her mind and how she just wants to be brave, and she, like, she wants something. She doesn't know what she wants, but she wants to be brave
that's
enough
exactly
to get it.
That's what I said to you on Twitter. I was like, And actually, that scene, number one, can I just say that number, Mitch, was such a smash number. It was both of Santana.
Oh, wow,
and
you just hit me with that. That's amazing.
Santana and Rachel's duets in this episode could have been taken straight out of Smash. They were both
Just gave me chills.
Smash,
Natalie,
numbers.
I'm about to tear up just from that. That's amazing.
But yes, Santana, like, Brave was like, it was interesting because it was kind of Santana saying what she thought about the situation she was in, and I will give the show credit because in the scenes leading up to it, like in the scenes where she was talking to Rachel about, you know, what was going on with her, you know, that song is her expressing that she wants to say what she thinks about the situation and that she wants to go and do what she wants and all that kind of thing. In the scenes leading up with Rachel, you know, a show, you know, a more of a quote-unquote comedy show would be more heavy-handed with that. You know, she'd be like, oh, Rachel, I'm so happy for you. And then we'd see her giving, like, a sly look or something. Whereas this actually showed her realistically trying to be a good friend and not express that she felt so crappy about it inside, if you know what I mean. Like, that actually came across really truthful, that she was trying to be a good friend about it originally, as opposed to a, oh, I'm such a bitch kind of thing. It was nice. I thought that was really, really nicely done. It's like, so yeah, I did like that number despite the fact it was quite random.
Yeah, it was kind of random, and I tend to not spoil myself, and I saw that Sarah Bareilles had put on her Facebook page the preview of it, and although I was disappointed to be spoiled, I was happy to know that they were doing such an amazing song on Glee that can fit for so many different characters.
Yeah.
I think they chose it for the best characters that they could have, because I know that they're both eventually going to be on Broadway doing Funny Girl, Santana and Rachel are, but the fact that they had to put on such a hard, harsh, and angry face to the world, even, just to get by and survive, is pretty rough. You have to be pretty brave to be able to survive on your own, cut down your best friends, and this isn't me opening up that conversation yet, but, you know, in general, like, this song really just, it translates well for the whole entire episode, not just for that one moment. So, moving on, no, go ahead, Jack.
I was going to say, it's such a Glee song. Like, it's almost like it was written for
it's like
the show.
Keep
like
holding on, like, or something like that. Like, it's
I agree, and it really was. And I just I can't get over the production value of that song. And claps to them for that song, as random as it was, for the production value. I think we can all agree on that much. Okay, so the next thing that happens is that Tina and Artie flip out on each other because they want to know who's going to win Valedictorian. Artie calls Tina McKinley's biggest bitch.
Okay.
That is...
I hate this entire plot line.
Go ahead.
Because these are the two characters that,
so
like, you
pointless.
You don't get enough of them already, and when you do get them, you make them both out to be horrible people. Like, Artie very well could have, like, just given Tina the spot because she needed it for Brown. She was, like, well in her right to ask for Artie to drop out.
I was gonna say, if Tina was being... In my world, I operate on a very, like, utilitarian base of, like, what is best for the people in the position that they're in. If Tina was being less of a bitch about it, I would say that she was in the right, and I would agree with her about Artie dropping out because he is already into his college, and it doesn't actually matter to him, like, I mean, except for having some sort of pride or whatever. But if he knows in his head that he was equal to it, but he gave it to her, and because she needed it, like, and he was already into the school he wanted to go to. Like, that is what I would see as fair.
Do you think Artie would have denied her the spot if he'd actually, like, asked her, like, hey, like, I need this? Or, like, do you think he still would have been like, no, like, I want this?
Yeah, because you didn't see any scene in which, like, they, you know, she came up to him aggressively being like, I've written your speech for you. You didn't see any actual conversation. So I think the whole point was more about him addressing the fact that she was... That's her tactic now, to be a bitch instead of to be a friend, you know? Like,
yeah, exactly. Like, I think Artie was driven as well. Like, you don't go up to somebody and tell them that their other partner is the school's biggest bitch. Like, you don't do that.
Yeah, and so Kitty is Artie's, like, a magical princess now. Like, Kitty is, like, my favorite bloody character now. Like, she's a
magical
so
princess.
Like,
and when they even mentioned in the prom queen, when Kitty, like, they even mentioned that Tina got prom queen. Kitty gave Tina her freaking dress to put on when she got slushed or whatever. Like, she's been nice lately. Like, I don't understand Tina's...
And she's
just as
like,
a bitch.
She was so out of line about Kitty, because Kitty is beautiful and awesome, and yes, she started out with the worst plotline in the world, but she's so good, and I love her, and Tina is horrible, so...
Whatever
she can.
I think it's really relevant that you guys are saying that recently she's become more horrible, because didn't Artie say...
Everyone's agreed that sometime you became a, crazy bitch.
You were abducted by aliens and injected with bitch Tina or something. And I was like, oh, you must have been friends with the same aliens that abducted Britney. So in general, Tina is never going to win the hearts of America if she continues on acting in the horrible ways that she is.
Sue even says it. She's like no one's favorite. When they're doing the auditions later, Sue's like, no one's favorite Glee member, Tina Conchang. God, if I was Jenna Ushkowitz and I'd been in this show since the pilot, I would be pissed.
Imagine how much hard work, time, and effort. Like, she shut down so many other projects, I'm sure, just to stick with Glee. And
she hasn't done anything else.
No, she hasn't. She's committed to it.
And she sits there doing... unless she thinks it's hilarious. Like, I don't know, maybe she thinks it's
Her character, throwing her character's, storyline down the toilet, I guess, is pretty funny.
From, like, season one, when they were like, oh, her stutter's fake, I'm like, oh, you just offended so many people and made people hate her like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that was insecurity, so, I mean, that I agreed with the way the show approached
That's when
it.
I started disliking Tina.
That was such a great storyline.
I don't think they ever knew how to handle an alternative character. Like a character who identifies to the alternative culture in terms of, like, you know, being goth or emo or whatever. And they kind of just... I know Glee has a lot of characterizations and that become caricatures, but they really didn't know how to handle that at all. Like, they could have actually made that interesting and they did not. So I feel bad for her, but oh well.
Oh well, Tina, you win nothing.
Yeah.
She really does win nothing. She
I
won
wonder, I don't, I
from
wonder
prom queen.
I cannot imagine... The thing is, like, season six, right? Like, so the end of this season is going to be people in New York, and I believe that we know Artie is going to have at least a little bit in New York from filming pictures and stuff like that. Tina, we don't know what's going to happen to her. Apparently she wants to go to Brown, which is in Rhode Island, I believe. I don't know where it is exactly.
It's in Rhode Island.
And so that means she might just not be around, and I just... I'd like to see both Kevin McHale and Jenna Ushkowitz finish out the show with the last season. You know, like, they've been there since the beginning. They can be there till the end, if you know what I mean. Like, but is there a place for them in season six? Like, if it's all going to be New York, like, it's not realistic that Tina is going to, come to New York every weekend, but it would kind of suck if they, they've done their duty in that choir room for so long and put up with so much, like, even so it would be weird if they
the most they put up with is just the non-sequitur
grid without anything, like.
Right, but I mean, the most they dealt with in Glee is just the non-sequitur everything, because it's probably really exciting to know that you finally get an episode surrounding around you, like the new Rachel. Wasn't that when the episode where Tina dreamed she was Rachel the whole episode?
No, that was props in end of season three.
Okay. So regardless, I feel like you're saying, Natalie, they've done their due time and they've been like, I don't know if I can say this in Glee chat, but I'm going to anyways. It's almost like they've been dick teased, because they've been given so much just to have it taken away.
like
the rug pulled underneath them,
Diane Agron and Amber Riley, they were there for all of that time, and Mark Salling, were there, but because they were seniors, they then graduated and they were like, not gonna, whatever, no.
Because it's unrealistic for everyone to go to New York, but then again, how do you make the show fair? You don't. It's just...
Yeah, and then you've got... I was going to say, with the seniors that left at the end of their senior year and have only come back sporadically... Like, that's one thing, but these guys have been there for so long now because they were made juniors. They've been there for the whole time, and so for them to just not get to the end of the show, like, to the show's finale in season six, would really suck. Like, I don't know, even though I don't actually like them that much, it would really suck for them. I would be like, God, I would feel so shortchanged if I was them. I would be like, I gave you everything.
Yes.
And given me nothing.
I agree that they deserve to be at the very end, but I don't think the show is going to benefit from adding those two
characters. Yeah.
Not even the fact that it's more characters. It's just the fact that it's those two who I don't know. I mean, this is just me personally. This was the very first episode where I thought to myself, yep, I don't give two shits about the McKinley storyline, which sucks because I loved it. Like, and Tina and Artie, I really care about their friendship.
I don't know, but it's just the way it's written.
And, like, to be honest, they were pretty crappy actors this episode. So I don't think the show is going to benefit from adding those two to a full New York centric show.
I feel like New York could potentially have a good Artie storyline if they know how to do it properly, because we're seeing him go at, you know, as a wheelchair user to a city that I know for a fact is really not wheelchair accessible, like none of the subway.
Oh, hell no. You won't get around in a wheelchair in New York City. And I'm sorry. It's impossible.
If they're living in, you know, if his film school's in Brooklyn and we know Sam's going to be in New York, I feel like maybe like you could have like an Artie and Sam roommates plot, like of trying to figure out New York in a, because like Rachel and Kurt and Santana are living like a delusional, beautiful, shiny New York life, like dream life, even in this stunning apartment and stuff. I want to see like Artie and Sam living like the crappy New York life.
Well, Natalie,
someone needs to live the crappy New York life.
Well, I mean, potentially after this,
someone needs to live that life.
Yeah.
Potentially after this episode, we'll see that. We'll get to those details in a bit. But I think in the end of the day, we could sit around and, you know, hash on Glee for, like we've always said, the many plot lines that they just drop like a hot potato, pretend it didn't happen, et cetera, et cetera. It's nothing new to us. I mean, Glee Chat's been around for, what, 3 years now? And we've gotten the run of the gambit. We know how this thing runs. So
remember how Tina was a vampire?
Remember how Tina's a vampire? I mean, come on.
That's awesome.
I think we want to start another. We could have like a bonus episode of Glee
Whole
Chat.
Whole episode that's just where, like, yes. Remember.
When... Yes, yeah. I'd really appreciate that. That'd be really great. Okay, guys.
Anyway.
So, Rachel says that she can't make it to the band practice that Kurt is doing for, isn't it the Pamela Lansbury's? And
such a stupid band.
I know. And she has to go to her understudy auditions because it's really hard being a star, which really pisses off Kurt, but super pisses off Santana. Santana says, if Rachel's not going, I'm not. And then
I love when season one Rachel comes out.
she's very deluded. It's a very deluded arrogance. It's like she doesn't realize how ridiculous she sounds because she has, it comes from all of these weird anxieties. And like her being upset about them casting an understudy, like she's been obsessed with Broadway since she could speak. She knows how it all works. She knows there have to be understudies, but she's still deluded enough to think that she doesn't need one, if you know what I mean. And it's that it doesn't take anything away from her that they need to cast an understudy.
It's almost like she's creating her worst enemy, you know? She's Voldemort her.
Yeah, she's... Oh, God. she's very, like... That whole thing was very, like, you are insane.
I'm
like,
surprised that Kurt is still, like, going with this Pamela Lansbury thing.
I know.
After even, like, Rachel's getting... Like, Rachel is in a Broadway show. There's no way she has time to be in your band.
Well, I've got a feeling...
I've
got a feeling
that... to swear.
No. I like it. We can be Glee Chat after dark. Let's just swear.
we've crossed that line many episodes ago.
Look, Pamela Lansbury is kind of my favorite plot line of the episode in terms of what happens with Kurt and Elliot. But yeah, I've got some thoughts about Pamela Lansbury as someone who's worked with many, many a band. And it's a really weird situation because Kurt's phone call with Blaine is completely insane. Like, and I think you're meant to think it's completely insane. Like, Blaine's like, you're being crazy with the stuff that, Kurt is saying to him about Elliot wanting to, you know, try and take over and the fact that he's... Like, because, and then what you're saying, Jack, about them not really being a band. Yeah, because we've seen their performances, and it's, I mean, basically what he's trying to do is form a pop band. He's trying to form S Club 7, like, because they have, like, backing players behind them that are the band, if you know what I mean.
But isn't it strange to anyone else that no one seems to care that Danny doesn't show up to practices?
And, well, this is the thing. This is what I think the next episode is about, Trio. It's called Trio, and there's a performance in it where it's just Danny, Kurt, and Starchild.
What?
And I've got a feeling that they decide, okay, the other girls aren't that into it. We are going to be
but
the band.
Danny's not that into it. She doesn't even show up. The only person that seems into it anymore is Kurt.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing. Kurt saying Kurt getting angry at Elliot saying my band. If you are in a band, you have the right to call it my band. Every member of Fall Out Boy says my band. Every member of One Direction says my band. It's not, if he wants to be his band and no one else to say my band when they're in it, he doesn't want a band. He wants a backing band for the Kurt solo project. And he's not trying to make the Kurt solo project, except he really is, if you know what I mean. He's not telling the world he's making the Kurt solo project.
He has a band for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, it's not even a band.
Yeah,
it's,
that's
the thing. I think what the show should have done
he
is that they should have...
He doesn't understand what being in a band is about.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think that even what the show should have done is, if you're going to create... If Kurt's going to start a band, the show should have started them learning the instruments and then not put the actual band that actually playing the fucking instruments in the background. They need to show the characters because there was a problem with they even did with the Glee Club. Like they would have the Glee Club and then they just have the band that would show up wherever. That was right. That was fine. That was what that was meant to be. If you're going to start an actual band plot line, have the actual band members be characters.
Yeah, it's like what are you? Yeah, that's the thing. Just get hire people to be the band who are in a band or something. Like,
don't
hire
name it,
someone
name
who's
it
going
Pamela
to be
Lansbury.
The drummer. Like,
sorry. I know you've probably
Pamela
talked
Lansbury
about this before, but I hate that name.
Oh, we mentioned
Pamela
it.
Pamela Lansbury is a problem. Oh, however, to me, it's not the biggest problem. As someone who's grown up incredibly invested in music and in more of a, like, in more of that way, in, like, in band dynamics and being really invested in various things, it offends me his attitude about his quote-unquote band. It really bothers me, and I'm just like, okay, are you trying to start a pop band in which you are all singers, like cabaret singers or something, and then you hire musicians? Are you trying to start an indie band, which is what you are claiming to try and start, where you're writing song stuff? If that's the case, then you guys need to all... You can play keyboards. We've seen you do that before. You play the piano. Danny can play the bass. Adam Lambert can play the guitar. And then just get someone else as a drummer, because Rachel and Santana are clearly not, like, in the band. Like, it's so offensive to everything it means to be a band.
They're so used to having the band in the Glee room. They're like, well, we've just hired those guys and then call ourselves a band.
I think if we had, like, an ultimate goal, this would make a lot more sense, but we don't. I think it was Natalie that you said this is just, like, the Kurt solo project and then some other people. It really is.
Yeah, he's trying to pretend it's not the Kurt solo project, but it is, if you know what I mean. And I'm not saying that if you start a band and then other people come into it and try and start to take over, that's not a problem. That is also a problem. But you have to have a thing being like, okay, so I'm the songwriter, like, or whatever. But trust me, every band that's had, like, I'm the lead singer, so you have to do what I say, has had, you know, a fallout. Like, you have to have
the most atypical band storyline that's out there, quite frankly. And it's almost like Glee setting it up just to be a random failure to give Kurt something to do. Like, what happened to Fashion School or his internship or... Did that all end as soon as you got into Niata?
I loved the internship. That was perfect for him. Like,
yes.
Is SJP just too busy to come on and they just killed it off?
I don't understand.
Don't even have her then. Have somebody else.
Yes, like, hire another person. Like, she got fired or she went up to Africa to serve children. I don't know. Like, get her off the show. Bring someone that's not famous on as that role. Give Kurt a purpose. Get him out of the Pamela Lansbury business. That's not going to get him anywhere. And this show, we've said it a million times before, guys, but we really need to start writing Glee. Like, not writing to the show creators. We need to write Glee.
Yeah, really, the band thing, if he was going to make a band in a way that a band deserves to be made, I'd be, like, all for it. But he's so... Like, what he was saying just went... I cannot express the rage I felt when he was on that phone call to Blaine and he said that Starchild said that in the interview, that Elliot said that in the interview, and then he said basically that he had no right to say that. I was like, oh my god, I'm gonna kill you, you little monster. He's insane. So arrogant, and I love him, but he's insane.
Well, he's insane, and we've seen that multiple times. How much of that gas in the choir room has he been sniffing all these years? Because, holy crap, there's, like, not a single person in Glee that has a sane bone in their body. They're all either just crazy. They're just... I was going to say something to the effect of they're killed off. I mean, that wasn't supposed to be in bad taste toward Corey Monteith, but for instance, he seemed pretty logical to me. I kind of miss Finn for that aspect.
Yeah, he seemed level-headed.
He seemed pretty level-headed. I mean, he did kind of...
He was like, I'm going to be a teacher. Like, that
he had, like, he had a direction. He had something going on that seemed legitimate.
The only reason why Finn was level-headed is because they used him as a punching bag and to be the politically incorrect one, so he had to keep learning from that, which is why he was level-headed, because he was going the way society should be going.
Thank you. That's the greatest statement that's ever been said on this show. I'm not being sarcastic. It's true. It's completely true. It's seriously, oh my god. Okay, I want to skip over this really quickly, the Artie and Tina competition, because they sing that song, which I think we can all agree is not a song that you would sing if you were auditioning to be like a lead vocalist in Nationals, because it was crap.
No, but we have to say one thing. There was one transition where Will comes in and goes, all right, guys, it's time for our breakdown.
Oh my goodness.
Oh no. Oh no.
I wanted to punch him. Shoot, I want to talk about Will for a second, because everything with Will... he's so wooden, and he wasn't always that bad. I swear to God, he was not always that bad. And now he just sort of sits there and is like, I think we should do this now. And then it happens, and it's so stupid. And as I said, this show used to have like a semblance of like prep time for musical numbers, which is one thing. But Will, as he just stands there, like they might as well just hire like a talking doll or something, because he's so pointless. And I swear he wasn't that bad. Always.
He's like an in-character narrator. Like, this is what you're going to do. And then they do it. And then that's it.
Yeah, I swear he didn't used to be like that.
Yeah.
So, unless anyone else has any thoughts about that insanity.
It was just insanity.
I think that it's because, like what I said before, how the show's fallen into a formula of itself. Now Will is just... everyone knows that Will's just going to be there and just do whatever, and that's it. They don't care about it. They don't care about any of those characters in the McKinley side anymore, which is why they need to move. Yeah. Like, they don't give a shit. They don't care.
Yeah. I want to jump back to the Elliot situation, which was kind of the next scene, in that Kurt brings him over to kind of test out what he's up to. And I just wanted to get all of you on this, because I want to make sure that no one has the wrong end of the stick, because I actually don't think the show showed it well enough. They're talking, like Kurt and Elliot, you know, Kurt's trying to, you know, give him all his sandwiches and find out what his motivations are. Kurt was imagining the worst scenarios and then switching back to reality. Like, everyone is clear on that, right? Like, that when, you know...
Well, yeah, but the echo effect was very nuanced. It was very hard to tell that...
Yeah, that's the thing, the echo, that's what I'm like. They put the sound effect on it. It wasn't enough. I'm afraid that there are people out there who actually think that that happened. And I'm
well, then I'm going to assume that they think that Kurt is schizophrenic, which they're probably not too far off of if they believe that at this rate.
Because you had him being like... You had Kurt being like, you know, are you trying to take care of my band? Yes. You know, like, kind of thing. Like, I'm like, exactly. No. That was in Kurt's head.
I was packing when I was watching this episode, and I actually thought that he actually said yes, like, I want to take over your band. And so, like, anyone who multitasks at all while watching TV is going to think.
It was clear enough, and I'm like, and I'm a bit disappointed
about
that. Yeah,
I'm so confused. What are you saying didn't happen, Natalie? I don't understand what you're saying.
Okay, in the scene with Elliot and Kurt, when they were having that conversation, and, you know, Kurt says, you're so great, you know, you're so talented. You could totally be the breakout star of our band. And Elliot goes, I am. And then Kurt's like, what did you say? And then he goes, no, don't be silly. Everyone brings something. Kurt is imagining Elliot's first answers. They don't really happen, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And he says, do you want to take over my band?
I actually
he's all like,
he was
yes.
saying that, to be honest.
No. But that's the thing. He wasn't. The show did not make that clear
enough.
They
did
not
make that
like
clear, no.
It had an echo effect over it and a slight, like, camera warp. It was not made clear enough, though. Because clearly, 50% of the people on this episode thought that, Elliot is sweet and earnest and generous, and he does not think the way Kurt thinks he does. That was a thing in Kurt's head, basically, when he was like, if you go back and rewatch it, and every time Kurt's like, pardon, what did you say? Then it switches back
that
to reality.
That makes more sense now.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, like, this does, I think, give further credence to Mitch's crazy theory of the week, which is that everyone was sniffing too much of that gas. Why is it a natural thing for people to imagine full-on conversations and legitimately ask someone if they just said what they said? That is schizophrenia, isn't it not? They hear voices, right? So, I mean, come on.
He's a banshee, Natalie. He's a banshee.
Kurt's quite wrapped up in himself.
He's a banshee.
Let's just put it like that.
This is not Team Wolf, guys. So,
the biggest thing I took from this entire episode was that I was worried that people would get that wrong, because Elliot is meant to be a very
I mean, imagine all the casual viewers watching this and thinking that
they'd be
Elliot
like, oh my god, he's actually a psycho. He's not. Everyone listening to this, he's not. Go and watch the scene again. Trust me.
And then tell your parents he's not.
Yeah, that was meant to be, that was meant to be a joke.
And your grandma who watched Adam Lambert on American Idol. I mean, they're bringing such a casual audience with bringing in characters like, you know, Elliot and Danny, that they're going to have to tone down. Is this fair to say tone down their scenes and make them a little bit less glee and a little bit more sane? I mean, we're not watching American Horror Story here, and I feel like I'm seeing a little bit too much of a comparison between Glee and American Horror Story, and that Ryan Murphy's, you know, the creator between the two. But, like, there are that many different twisted things happening in Glee that you could easily make that comparison if you tried hard enough. Wouldn't you say, Natalie?
I have not seen American Horror Story, but I do think that there is... I could always do with a bit of a dose of reality to Glee. Like, I think that I've said this before about various shows. I think that the most important thing about... okay, this is going to be a bit of a random description, but okay, with a show that is supernatural, for example, like Buffy or Teen Wolf or something like that, you often get the show and the way the characters act and talk to each other being incredibly realistic, because even though there's a supernatural element, because basically when you watch TV, you need an element to be heightened. You do not want to watch reality the way it really exists in person. No, trust me.
No, I'm following you. I'm agreeing.
You don't want to watch a show that is reality the way that it exists in person, because it's either too boring or it's too uncomfortable. So a show needs to have an element that is not real. In a show like Teen Wolf, you see the characters interacting and the way they talk to each other and act with each other, and it was the same in Buffy, in such a realistic way in their character dynamics, because the element that is not realistic is the supernatural element. In Glee, the element that's not natural is the singing, so I would like every other element to be as realistic as possible, if you know what I mean.
And I agree with you so much. And yeah, with Good point, Teen Wolf, Natalie. Exactly what you said is right. But the thing is, though, is Glee used to be like that. It used to be like that in season one.
Did.
The reason why it was such a great show is because everyone can connect to every... this is a pretty big statement, but everyone can really connect with at least one aspect of every single one of those characters back in season one. It was not realistic from the singing, breaking out into dance, whatever. But that doesn't matter, because we related so much to those characters. Same with Teen Wolf. Exactly the same.
Yeah. And then you get a show... That's why shows like that are a straight comedy, like set in a coffee shop or something, have such heightened and ridiculous plots, because they need something that's not realistic. Their setting is completely realistic, so their dialogue is what's unrealistic. Glee, because it has a heightened element of the singing, means that every other aspect has the opportunity to be as real as possible, and it did used to be like that, and it's not now, and I wish it was.
Yeah, because I'm just thinking of scenes in season one, once again. I know it's hard to harp back to the good old days now, but when Quinn was crying, it was raining, she went into Terry's car, and she was offering to let her keep the baby or something. Those moments really stood out as poignant moments that were, a little bit heightened in the real world, but as far as a drama goes, that would happen on a show like Teen Wolf within the human element. It's not very heightened as far as TV shows go. Because, I mean, there's still, even though you're saying, Natalie, that people on the show Teen Wolf, for instance, talk to each other more naturally, there's still a heightened level of drama, naturally. But moments like that existed in Glee, where they fit in that same mode that Teen Wolf, for instance, does fit within its level of drama, you know?
Yeah. And it's just, Glee could always do with a dose of making every other aspect besides the impromptu songs as real as possible. And the New York aspect of the show actually has been very good in general, in that in that department, which is why I've liked it. And so I was a bit like, about the, I get the joke in what they were doing with that Adam Lambert scene. I get what they were trying to do. The fact it wasn't made clear enough really stresses me out, but I wish they'd just had Kurt, you know, find out that Elliot was amazing and not have this weird, confusing, like, oh, I heard him, I am at... It was really like that 70s show. Like, it reminded me of, like, really, like...
Oh, it's like those scenes where they're smoking pot in the basement and they go around in a circle.
Kind of reminded me of that. But it just reminded me of, like, not, I don't know, it just reminded me of, like, sitcom-style humor. Like, and I was like, no. But...
Which Glee tends to avoid up until it becomes to Sue, and anyone that derivates, is that the word? From Sue, deviates. Like, you know, deviates, there we go. From, you know, like Bree or Becky. But in general, I'd say
Bree,
that's...
I forgot Bree even existed.
I mean, you're, I guess you're supposed to, because, you know, like, they almost wrapped up what she was doing, because she cried and she showed that she was human and she was almost pregnant and blah, blah, blah. Someone else you probably shouldn't have forgot existed, but wasn't in this episode that I just recognized, was Jake. Wasn't to be seen.
Oh, he was in the background.
He was just doing whatever.
Well, see, there you go. I didn't notice him. He was that far in the background. That, and he's supposed to be one of the new...
I always notice the hot men.
Well, no, he's just supposed to be one of the new directions that's important to the show, but they're dropping him.
Not anymore, don't worry.
I mean, not anymore. We've completely dropped... I mean, I think we're even dropping off the Kitty storyline soon enough. Because of the way Tina was treating her during that song. Like, she doesn't love you, Artie. I can tell. I can see through her eyes. So, I mean, that means every new direction, the 2.0s, are done. Like, their storylines are being cut off. No one cares. Bye.
I'm just surprised that Kitty... This is back more into the show right now, but I'm surprised that Kitty didn't say anything, like, in any of this. Like, back in, like, beginning of season 4, if you called Kitty a bitch, you would probably die.
She had one thing at the end when Tina was, you know, when Blaine was talking about getting into, you know, Tina getting into Brown and opening the gates for her, Kitty leans over and goes, they better open them really wide, as in, like, making a fat joke, which doesn't even make sense because Kitty gave Tina her dress and it fit her.
Oh, Natalie.
Do you know what I mean?
Natalie, you win everything. You win everything. You just win everything. That's it.
Like, I'm not going to lie. It was probably a different dress in a different size in reality. Oh. But in the show, Tina took Kitty's dress and it fit her. So I don't think Kitty would make fat jokes about Tina. But anyway, they probably forgot that
was
happened,
gorgeous. So, no, Natalie, that... Like, oh, boy. That was a beautiful moment.
Let's move on to Santana's audition.
Yes, okay. So Santana jumps into the very unnaturally horrible understudy auditions for Funny Girl, which, by the way, I don't know how any of
those people would never get
through.
Like,
they would never get through. This is an American Idol.
That was stupid. I thought it was a Glee Club thing. I thought it was something from high school that was happening.
Yeah, they would never have open auditions to a Broadway.
No. Like, goodness. They're not going to waste someone's time. No. Anyways, so Santana.
A shortlist from the people that they originally auditioned for.
Yeah. Maybe that's supposed to be in Glee's heightened, unrealistic world, because they do have Rachel say, wow, I can't believe that no one else can sing in this city. I see why you hired me. So maybe that is their shortlist, but I don't know if I can give Glee that excuse of its unrealistic world. But anyways, Santana...
The one thing that would make this whole plotline better if it was on a smaller scale show. Like, if it wasn't such a revival of such a huge movie, if it was, like, a tiny, like, off-Broadway thing, this would be an amazing, awesome plotline that should be happening.
But Funny Girl is Funny Girl. It defines Broadway in a lot of ways. It's not something you just show up to and try and sing Tinkle Twinkle Little Star, you know. Santana...
She's going to be on the cover of New York Times Magazine. Like, this is a huge deal, and New Yorker, it's annoying.
But Santana jumps in through the doors, pulls Rachel's season 1 episode 13.
Yeah, she basically steals the exact choreography. Yes. Like the entire
to the T. But she sings it to a rock opera version of it.
Yeah, she sings it in a much more modern style, which it sounded great, not appropriate for the show because they're not doing it in a rock opera style. They are doing Funny Girl. But whatever, it did sound great.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that. Getting her funny girl, though, because yes, she might have knocked it out of the park, but does that show her ability in being able to sing as Fanny? Maybe.
No,
but she did have.
She wasn't singing as Fanny. It's all very unrealistic. I'm not gonna lie. This whole Broadway audition thing is all very, very unrealistic. And
Yes. But it doesn't matter to me if you're speaking as Fanny or not, because in general, I mean, once again, we can harp back to Smash and when they were doing auditions in season one. A lot of those actresses auditioning to be Marilyn in episode one were dressed up as Marilyn, singing songs by her, etc. You, in general, doing auditions, do want to try and sound like the place the part that you want. So you wouldn't
even though they gave it to fucking Karen when she was the only one that didn't come as her. Like, oh my god.
Nor is this Team Wolf. This is not Smash Chat. Dead and gone. So we unfortunately. So
you just called this Teen Wolf.
I said this is not Team Wolf. Nor is Smash. Okay. Anyways, so then Santana is able to be the apple of Peter Facchinelli. What's the actor's name?
Facchinelli.
He's everything he's ever looked for in an actress, and Rachel looks aghast, and it seems almost as though Santana's going to steal all of Rachel's thunder and take over her role. So, Jack, do you see anything happening with him liking Santana more?
No.
Or what was the purpose of doing this, Jack?
I don't. I like him as a character. I think he's quite nice.
Yeah, I just can't. It's so hard for me to get on board with this just because of what I said before. Like, it's just stupid. I mean, and it's annoying because I really, really am liking what's happening with the characters. It's just this setting that it's all in is just so hard for me to get on board with.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like what you said. I feel like it would be good if it was off Broadway because it as opposed to this massive. A thing that's so much like money and like, you know, energy and stuff would be going into, and like the far a quicker turnaround time and Rachel acting like, you know, star and all of that and having all of that sort of false confidence even before the show's opened and it might flop. Like it is really weird, and I don't know. It's
because Rachel, she has nowhere to go now. Like, she's already achieved her biggest dream that she could ever accomplish. So now, in terms of the show, the character has nowhere else to go. This is what we've been building up since the very beginning of the show, and now it's all gone. So if they did, like, an off-Broadway thing, and then, like, next season, like, if they jump 2 years or something,
she's finally made what she wanted to do, I would care so much more. And let me tell you something. I know that they already did West Side Story on this show, right? Like, they did West Side Story in whatever, in Blaine and that horrible plotline. But if they had had, say, she'd been doing, like, an off Broadway West Side Story and she'd gotten Maria, which is a part that she does actually like, because
has
she talked about it in season one.
Yeah.
And then she got that, and then Santana auditioning for her understudy for this would be legitimate because of the thing that she brings up later. Broadway is relatively colorblind in casting. If they wanted Santana to play Fanny, they could probably swing it. But because Rachel is super racist about it later, what would be even more realistic is Rachel would easily get the part as Maria, but so could Santana, if you know what I mean. Like, if they wanted them to compete as a part, it's a bit random that it's this. So you have, like, maybe an off-Broadway West Side Story, and then they have drama, and then they get through it, and then the next season she goes up to Funny Girl, and then the season ends with her, like, getting nominated for a Tony or something. Like, I don't know. But they
can't end Glee on, oh, she won a Tony. That's very, 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 very Smash. And that no other show has done that, because no other show has really been a musical show to the extent of Smash or Glee. So I'm definitely hoping that that's not where this Funny Girl storyline is going. I mean, it's inevitable,
it
has to. Because she's the underdog. She is the ultimate underdog. Come on. She's the grandma sweater-wearing Jewish girl who is never going to get the lead part.
She doesn't wear grandma sweaters anymore.
Not anymore. Well, Well, hey, that got me thinking of clothes. As non-sequitur as it may seem, I thought Santana was wearing something extremely risque for this kind of edition. Not to mention heels. Because, I mean, I'm not... This is nothing to the effect of slut-shaming, etc. This is to say there is a certain dress protocol that you should follow by for a professional audition, and it's not a kind of dress that you wear out to a nightclub. It just... It's not for this certain type of situation.
I hate when she wears those little dresses. I mean, it's not like... Again, it's not, like, a problem. I just think they look really weird and make her head look really big. Like, I think that she's got too much hair.
Her hair makes it look really big.
She's got too much hair, and she's really thin. She's not curvy. She's really thin. Yeah. And when she wears those dresses, it just makes her look like she has a really big head. And I don't know
But her legs
why.
Are, like, not long in a way that she should wear such a short dress like that, because she doesn't have too much more torso left where that dress stops, and it's a bit uncomfortable as I'm watching, because I'm like, that camera angle can go right underneath, and that's just not good. It's just not comfortable to me to watch a show that's supposed to be concentrating on a performance when I'm concentrating on the possible wardrobe malfunction of Santana's dress. And it just, I don't see why they had to put her in such a short dress in this scene. And it made me just the tiniest bit upset. She feels to me like she's earned more of a professional stature than to think that would be an okay thing to do for a professional Broadway audition.
I mean, it could also be done on purpose as another aspect to sort of offend Rachel as much as possible. Not necessarily done on purpose by Santana, but like by the fact that Santana walking in there being her Santanariest self when she hasn't even made an effort to try and, you know, learn about Fanny or whatever.
Or to even Broadway glitch herself up. She's going to show up.
You know what I mean? Like, I can make it in Broadway being just myself and, you know, like, and that will incense Rachel even more, you know, like, and, you know, maybe it's something to do with that. Like, you know, maybe the whole spec for the scene was that Santana will go in there being her most Santanariest and still succeed, and that will, like, bother Rachel even more.
Yeah, and I agree with you saying that that could have been potentially what they were looking to do, to harken back to, you know, like, her Like a Virgin days, where she was just ready to sleep with anyone that wanted to. And I think that is a bit offensive to me, like I said, because of the development I've seen in Santana, and also how
about sleeping with anyone or being slutty. I just think it's like about her, the way that she presents herself as a person, and what you said about the protocols of auditions and stuff like that.
Because to me,
and,
like, auditions are interviews. I wouldn't think that you would show up like that to an interview for anything.
Santana would.
Okay, all right.
Santana's style.
And that's just what she doesn't care. And the whole idea of her just kind her coming in being like, yeah, it doesn't apply to me. I'm just going to be me, and it's going to be hot shit. And that, when Rachel knows all of the protocols, would piss her off even more, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I think you make really good points as to why Santana, or, you know, the costume designers, decided to do what they did with Santana.
I will give the costume Glee Club credit in terms of, I have no idea how much control, like, Ryan Murphy or the writers have over this. I have read interviews with the costume designers on this show. They do make very conscious choices with, like, symbolism in costumes and stuff like that. So, like,
and they have a hell of a lot of costumes to do that with, because they have a lot of characters that are, like, dabbled in development, you know, not a lot, but they just have, like, I don't know, like, let's just say Artie wants to be a film major, so then they might once in a while have to show him wearing, like, a sweater with a camera lens on it. You know what I mean? Like, they have a lot of stuff to try and keep track of.
And it gets even more subtle than that, but they do have extremely hardworking costume people that do a lot of, you know, take it on themselves to, like, read the scripts and then come up with really symbolic clothes for people's storyline development. So we never know what's the situation there. And, I mean, I think even the difference between, like, what Santana wore in the rehearsal later and what Rachel wore and stuff. But moving away from Rachel and Santana for a second, we need to go to Kurt and Elliot in the guitar shop, because...
Natalie, I feel like I could feel your ovaries explode all the way in America, but correct me if I'm wrong.
It's not even about ovaries. It's not like, oh my god, that was so hot. I love this song. And it's The Darkness. I don't know if you people are too young to have been around when The Darkness was, like, big, or even if they were big in America, because I know they're from America, but they're actually really massive in Australia, but... Oh my god, they're so funny and ridiculous, and I love glam, like, I love glam rock, and I like that later Elliot mentions T-Rex, which is totally just Adam Lambert. Like, this character is Adam Lambert. It's not actually...
Yeah,
I love T-Rex, and Darkness are like wannabe glam joke band, and they're incredible and funny, and I love this song, and it's such an epic song, and Adam Lambert is like the only person in the world that I'd ever imagine being able to cover it properly, and it was like,
yes.
I said on Twitter, it was like 10% this performance, this Guitar Shop scene, it's like 10% naff, but 90% like fucking incredible. Like, I loved it so much. It was a bit stupid that they're like, oh yeah, we're here to buy a guitar, and he's like, don't touch the axes, man. And I'm like, how are they meant to buy a guitar if they're not allowed to touch them? Like, but whatever.
But they were doing weird. You know what, they reminded me once of Kurt's performance of it was his audition for West Side Story. Natalie,
Everything's I'm the greatest
up.
Star.
I'm the greatest star. You know, when he's climbing up on the rafters and
like, yeah, he always gets very, like, climbing. Like,
he's very climbing, and he's always wearing very tight pants, but he's able to do what he's doing very easily. It's almost like Spider-Man.
He likes doing that, like, Chris Colbert, he likes doing gymnastics. Like, he used to post heaps of selfies in, like, Glee rehearsal of, like, hanging upside down on, like, the rings and, like, you know, the bars and stuff. Like, he can do that, and so they played it into the show, basically, I guess. He's obsessed with weird gymnastics.
He should do a Pink song by doing like the trapeze art.
Doing does. Like twirling, yeah.
Yeah, like those ribbons and stuff, that'd be great. So yeah, we will move on from that awesome performance. I can't really think of anything more that happened plot-wise in that scene, unfortunately.
Oh, no, but, I have something plot-wise that happened in that scene.
Oh.
I think Kurt doesn't realize it because he's so incredibly hung up on this whole Elliot's trying to show me up thing. I think that that song was Elliot serenading Kurt, and that Kurt didn't realize
that happening. I totally see that.
I get that.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Everything from that like, to the kiss on the cheek. Yep.
We're singing. I don't know if it's like, oh, we're singing. And I don't think he's necessarily trying to be like a real, like a homewrecker about Blaine or anything. Like, I don't think he's actively, but I think that he likes him. And I think that the way that he gestured towards him when he said my heart's in overdrive and you're behind the steering wheel on that lyric, I was like, yeah, I think
he's not like Sebastian. He's not Sebastian. He's being more like smooth.
He's not like Sebastian, and I don't think he's actually trying to pull Kurt, but I
exactly
think,
he's just
I
kind of I, being too friendly well, without realizing how close he's being.
I Maybe. Do think well, did... that, yeah I think that he I don't think I think he's trying to say I'm here if you're available, I'm here, if you know what I mean. And
see, I don't know about that because he made a point.
Yeah, he did make a point about not just hooking up, but I don't think he wants to just hook up.
I don't think, it's not about him hooking up, he just, like, he's being one of those friends that's like, I'm here for you if anything ever happens, if you need, like, someone to cry, a shoulder to cry on, and, like, Blaine is treating you badly or something, like, I'll be there for you, and he's kind of going in that direction, not like, hey, I want to screw your brains out, but like, I'll just be here for
you. I think it's one of the ones of like, he just really wants another gay friend, because he mentioned that everyone he's met has just wanted to hook up, but then I think that because he hasn't had one before, he doesn't know how to act to another person who two gay people that can just be friends.
I think he is being to Kurt like Kurt was to Blaine when he met Blaine.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that would
make
sense.
You know what
sense.
I mean? I think even though he's older than Kurt and stuff, I think that he is infatuated with Kurt. And whether it's as a friend or as more, I don't know, but I think that song, I think the way he gestured to him on that lyric, yes, it could be part of the performance because they're performing it together, whatever. I think that that was symbolic. I think that he has a thing and that he was expressing it.
Let me
you know
just,
what I mean?
Let me just point this out. Elliot to Kurt right now is like me to a guy that I was friends with while I was dating someone else in Florida, and ultimately what happened is I hooked up with my friend, and I feel like they're cloning my life, and they're just I feel like that's gonna happen.
And I love Elliot. I don't want them to ever put him in the bad guy situation.
Exactly.
Like,
it's
or whatever. Like,
no one's in that, on the bad side here. Like, Blaine's going to take it, like, the bad side, but no one is on, like, no one is doing anything bad.
Yeah.
Well, let's save what happens later on for when Blaine discovers everything else.
I wasn't sure. When it, in the performance, I wasn't sure. I wasn't like, I was like, is this just me shipping it? Or is it actually a thing that they're trying to imply? And then at the end when Becky
Don't get there yet. Let's save that. Oh, no, save some juice. We got some more Elliot Kurt stuff to talk about, I promise. I know it's frustrating, but we're almost there. Anyway, almost there. Hold on.
I think it was a serenade, and I'd like Adam Lambert or someone to serenade me.
Yes, please. Can that happen?
I knew I heard those ovaries exploding. Okay, so...
My ovaries exploding.
And I don't... You guys probably don't have this problem.
Tina.
But I... No, I'm not...
Is this going to relate to ovaries now?
No. If a guy is gay, they automatically become untouchable to me. As in, I don't fancy gay guys. Not because I'm like, ew, they're gay. But because, obviously not, because
it's just an instant, like, turn off for you.
Yes, it's an instant, like, I know that they're not here for it, so they are not like that to me. Yes, they can be very handsome and stuff, but I automatically don't think of them that way.
I don't think many, in gay culture, I think it's very popular to act like Kurt did to Finn and to have crushes on straight men, but not in a...
I mean,
not as much of an aggressive way as Kurt did to Finn, though. I mean, that's a whole other beast, I know, and we've definitely beat that horse dead. But
so I think...
But I think, I mean, personally, I have never stopped myself from liking a man who is straight. I wouldn't act upon it, but I would still, you know, I would fantasize easily, like you're saying you wouldn't about Adam Lambert. Yeah. I would. I mean...
like, I've never harbored a crush on a gay guy. Like, I just don't think about them that way.
I was about to say I have, but I mean that's clear.
I'm the same with you, Natalie. Like, I'm pretty much the same. There's like only been one instance where I've had like a crush on like a straight guy, but that's a whole other story. But like it's the same. Like, if I find it this straight, like, I'm not gonna. Yeah, like because it's just it's not stupid, but like as, for me, I'm just like I'm just like, it's like a hands off, like not even like thinking about it. Yeah, don't think about it.
This podcast needs a straight person to like talk about all the girls on the show. This podcast needs like a straight guy to talk about all the girls on the show, or a lesbian.
I was gonna say I'm bisexual and I don't have that same.
Well, that works.
I don't have that same thing with girl. Actually, no, I don't think I know any straight girls. I was gonna say, have I any, had any crushes on girls who are straight? I don't actually think I'm friends with any girls that are straight. So I
don't know or aren't friends with. I'm like, wow, you live in a very secluded life.
Most of my friends are all straight. Like, seriously, pretty much all of them.
Most of my friends are queer girls. So yeah.
Well, I'm still young. I'm still young. So like, I haven't had as much exposure.
Hey, you're a baby. Yeah.
Yes. All right. So, sexuality is an Adam Lambert aside. We have the next scene, which is Rachel's big fight with Santana after the audition. They're back at the apartment, and Santana is just ripping Rachel a new one. And I don't take sides yet, guys. Wait till I finish. So, as Rachel is being, I think it's safe to say, verbally kind abused by Santana.
Yeah.
And Rachel then slaps Santana very hard in the face and says, I think you should move out.
Well, they're both being inappropriate.
And I'm going to open up the doors to all debate in a very organized way by calling on people and saying what their point is.
Yeah, everyone say their whole piece.
Okay. Everyone say their whole piece. Okay. I know that Kyle and Natalie are really anxious to talk about this because you guys have had a little thing on Twitter.
Yes.
Jack has jumped in on this, and I'm going to stay as neutral as I can in the situation because that's how I feel. So we're going to start it off by giving Kyle a full... I'll start a stop timer.
Oh, my goodness.
2 minutes.
Oh, No, don't do that.
I want to debate, and I want to learn who's right.
I haven't organized my thoughts. I'm not part of this doc thing. I need to, like,
What's the objection to doing a formal debate? That's okay. That's a big thing.
So I'm... The thing with me is, like, I think both these girls are being inappropriate, I think. But I think... When it comes down to it, I think Rachel was acting the most inappropriate. I feel like Santana had a right to audition for that role. I think if it was an open audition like it was, which is ridiculous, I think that Santana had a... if I was her roommate and Rachel had never spoken to me and been like, you can't audition for this, please don't audition for this, I'm not going to be like, oh, I'm not going to audition. Santana wants what Rachel wants. Santana wants, like, fame. She wants to be discovered. yada yada. We saw that earlier in the episode when she was talking about it at the diner. And she finally found a way to get discovered. And yeah, I totally like agree that the way she did it was a total bitch move. With the way that she copied Rachel's entire performance, I agree. Like, that was out of line. But I think the fact that she auditioned for it is not that big a deal. And I think that Rachel's overreacting because Rachel thinks that she doesn't need an understudy. She thinks that she's the gold star. She, like, is the perfect woman. And she's going to act this way, I think, with any understudy. But she's going to be like, okay, if it's a stranger, I'll accept it. But it's Santana. I can force her out of this. Like, she's my friend. Like, I'm not going to let her do this. And I think Rachel needs to just accept that Santana is doing this. If it was anyone else, she'd deal with it. But because it's her friend and she thinks that she has some sort of control, she's going to alienate their friendship and make her feel like she has to get out. And I feel like and she even called out Kurt. She said Kurt isn't her friend. And Kurt literally just stood there, like, just sat there. Yes. Like, and so that was an example of how Rachel's blowing things out of proportion more so than Santana, because Rachel was just blowing everything up, and I think she just needs to take a moment to cool down and think about it. Yeah, Santana did it in the wrong ways, but what she did was okay, and I feel like Rachel's the one that needs to, they both need to apologize, but I think Rachel needs to also come to realize that she's not that big a deal as she thinks he is. Oh my goodness, that was a rant.
All right. Natalie, he got his fair share. Okay. Do your best to keep it as equal time-wise as we can. Because I just know this. I know we could spiral into Santana Rachel. I know we could. So is in interest of keeping it as organized as we can. Natalie, please. Okay. And Jack, I'll give you your time, too.
And
Jack,
I will not interrupt, I promise.
And Jack, you'll get your time, too. And then he's muting the mic so you won't talk. Ready, set, go.
Okay, I don't disagree with Kyle on a lot of that. I think that it's, like, it all is quite true. I think that, however, I'm a big sort of person of, okay, with Santana, we sort of touched on it earlier in the episode. It's kind of, yes, she had the right to do it. She had the right to audition. And I don't even necessarily think it came out of spite. And I think that Rachel was slightly acting insane about it. And I think that it was, Santana auditioning was less innocent than just, oh, I heard about this from you, so I'm doing it. There was elements of spite in it, if you know what I mean. However, that doesn't mean that she didn't have the right to do it and try and, but on the other hand, there are lots of things that you have the right to do that like, there's a difference between ethics and morals, if you know what I mean, and there are things that you might have the right to do that you still wouldn't do because it's maybe a bit hurtful.
Well, Natalie,
like that.
I think you're basically referencing things like, I don't know, like, it's my free speech right to be able to do X, Y, Z.
I'll give you an example. Say Mitchell and Kyle are going out. They're not. This isn't real life. Mitchell has a different boyfriend.
Mitchell isn't, yes, no.
Say Mitchell and Kyle are going out, and then Mitchell and Kyle break up, and then Jack wants to date Kyle. Jack technically has the right to date Kyle, but in certain friendship dynamics, Jack would never date Kyle. Some friends might be totally cool with it. Some friends might be like, yeah, that's fine, date my ex, I don't care. Some friends would be like, that's actually a massive problem for me, if you know what I mean. And in either situation, Jack technically has the right to date Kyle, but there's some friendship dynamics where there's no way to say, oh no, you know, you have no right to do that. But there's friendships where even if they technically have the right, they just never would because of emotional reasons. They would never do that to their friend because of how it would make them feel or whatever. And I think it's like that kind of situation. Santana had the right to do that. She had she's a person just like anyone else to go to this open audition, but it was something that was, you know, clearly fucking Rachel up. And it was like the one thing that she could have kind of not done, if you know what I mean, that she could have avoided. And I mean, I don't know whether she should or shouldn't have, because I don't think her, I don't think it came out of a good place. I think it came because she was, you know, witnessing Rachel being, like, arrogant and holier than thou, and, you know, I am untouchable and I don't need an understudy, and Santana was kind of fed up with biting her tongue about sort of how Rachel had been acting, and she was like, hey, you know, whatever, I'm going to use this opportunity. Whereas if she was a little bit more compassionate about it, not that Rachel had necessarily earned that compassion, but if they were in a better place with each other and she'd earned the compassion, you know, she might not have done it. However, after it all happened, you know, Santana seemed incredibly, like she didn't realize that it was as bad a situation as it was. Like, she seemed quite hurt about Rachel saying that they'd never been friends. And, you know, as I said earlier, I think that, you know, the stuff that Santana said to her about it was all us, our hate drove you and stuff, I think that was incorrect and that her guilt was misplaced, as we said before. I think that she's telling herself that. I don't think that that's actually what Rachel was like. As we said, Rachel was always kind of deluded from childhood about what she was going to be. And I think that she was probably shocked when she started getting people hating on her. Like, she probably expected people to think she was, like, amazing. And she succeeded, like, in spite of that hate, like, not because of it. And she's still kind of deluded about herself in the way that she's acting about, like, being a star and about, like, the show hasn't even opened yet. She should be more earnest and grateful and less sort of big-headed. Like, I understand that it's pressure, but she is being a kind of wanker about it. Then she was, like, super racist about Santana in terms of casting her as Fanny, because as I said, Santana, they could get away with a great thing about Broadway. This isn't as solid a debate as Kyle's. This is just me rambling. A great thing about Broadway is it is actually generally quite colorblind in a lot of shows. If you go and see Les Mis on Broadway when it opens, for example, I don't know about this cast, but like casts I've seen in London, you'll see like black people and Asian people in it. And like, there probably were not a lot of black and Asian people in the French Revolution, if you know what I mean. But it's like a show where they just cast whoever they want. And some shows are specific to a certain era and they try to get people of that era. Like, I believe that Aladdin is actually casting a lot of Arabic background people, which is cool. But and Funny Girl is very much set in a certain time in New York. However, Santana could have played that role. If they wanted to make Santana play it, they could. She's not that inappropriate for the role in terms of her background. But then Santana turns it like super, Rachel turns it like super racist, which was kind of shocking for me. But the other thing.
Well, let's stop on that point, Natalie, because big thing that she would make a racist comment towards Santana about. Wasn't it even West Side Story that she.
No. She said like the Puerto Rican parade or something. Like, she was being really belittling about it. But my big thing about. That really is sitting badly with me about Santana, even though I think Rachel was more disgusting in that scene. My bigger thing about Santana auditioning to this, like if someone did it for me, how I weigh it up is kind of what you said earlier that I said to Kyle on Twitter and that we mentioned, is that this is something Rachel wants specifically. Santana doesn't know what she wants. She just wants something. She just wants. And I feel like when someone, it's like, for example, if I have like a red apple and a banana and I'm like, and Jack's like, I'd like the red apple. And Mitch is like, I'd like some fruit. I don't really care which fruit, but I'm going to just grab the red apple. If you know what I mean? When Jack only specifically wants the red apple. Does that metaphor make sense to me, to you guys?
Yes.
Yeah, 100%, it really does, Natalie.
She's grabbing the red apple and she should be possibly looking for some other fruit.
She should rather get the pear or the banana. The pear not in the situation at all, or the banana that's also alternatively offered to her. So, yeah, Natalie, like, you make really good points, and I want to make sure Jack gets his fair turn into. No, it's fine. No, Kyle and I were sitting here in agreement that you make a good point about it's not a socially acceptable thing to do. But she's still in the right to do it.
Yeah, she has the right. It's just a little not socially acceptable.
That's fine.
And if someone took my red apple, I'd be super, super, super cut about it. I'd be like, this is my thing. Though I don't think she should be that crazy. Santana made an excellent point about being like, if you hadn't been in the show and I'd said I was auditioning for an understudy, would you be being this insane?
Yes.
And I think that's a massive point. It's like, I don't think Santana's out to try and take Rachel's limelight. However, if Rachel is being that neurotic about it as your friend, I wouldn't take her red apple. I would look for something else.
Great red apple metaphor. I feel like that really like solidified it.
I'm
in
glad
everyone's...
you didn't use a metaphor full of cherries.
Oh.
Oh no, Kyle, just stop right there. Okay, Jack, do you have anything you need to say desperately about this, or do you feel that you have had your point said by both Kyle and Natalie?
No, I've got so much to say. I've been like biting my tongue.
Okay. So, in interest of time, once again, I will repeat, just as I did for Kyle and Natalie, we need to keep this shorter because we have some exciting news to talk about today. Don't apologize. It's all on water under the bridge, but let's keep it going. Keep it.
Okay, my biggest My biggest beef, I don't disagree or agree with a lot of stuff Natalie said. I'm also agree with her, but my point comes from more like of a different way, in more of a rebuttal to Kyle. I agree with Rachel 100%. I used to like Santana as a character, but in this, I am pissed. Could you imagine, like, in your whole high school, having somebody attack every little thing that you do? Like, whenever you say you want to go onto Broadway, somebody there, you know, just somebody there always in your ear saying, that's gay, that's, like, she. I'm not saying gay's embarrassing, that's exactly what she says. She says, gay Barry, Lady Hummel, just attacks you. Then when you leave high school, have that girl show up at your door, just not even ask you if she wants to move in. Just does it. She doesn't care. She just moves in. Still have her, even though they've been friends and having some moments, still have that one person attack every little thing that you do. Then when you make it to your biggest dream job, the biggest thing you've ever wanted to do, and then have that one person that has been in your ear saying that that's one of the stupidest things, that you're never going to get far on Broadway, have that person steal your signature song that they know is your signature song, audition for a role without asking, without even letting you know, and then, like, I'm not even sure what I'm trying to say, but I just could not imagine me getting as far as I have in my one job and have this one person who has been criticizing me throughout my whole journey to get there come up and then just steal the song, do it just because, for the fucking sake of it. I could not imagine what that would be like.
It was kind of for the sake of it, wasn't it? It was very much.
It was.
She has
no... Because Santana...
Take the apple, Natalie. Yes, Jack.
Santana has had no motivation whatsoever to go onto Broadway. She's been in West Side Story. She was whatever in Rocky Horror. But that's different. She's had no motivation. And to have her come up and take that... And then just do it. And then I'm not even sure what my point is.
No, I totally get your point.
And then I feel that Rachel has just been kicked. Even though she's in a dream job, she's just been kicked to the floor so much. And then to have her just not being able to deal, not even to be able to deal with what's going on, for her to move out of her apartment in New York City is a big deal. I think that she's going through a lot of shit, and Santana just does not understand. Yeah. I'm just thinking what it would be like for me to have the person who's been attacking me so much to come and just do what I've always wanted to do for no reason.
That makes sense.
I can't even imagine that.
And I 100 totally completely agree with you. I see your vision, I see your point, but I think referencing it to that person and kind of separating it from Santana and her personality and the moments that she's had with Rachel. I don't watch Glee as avidly as you do, because I don't podcast about it every week, so you guys know the characters much more than I do. But when I think of Santana and Rachel's relationship, I feel like they're much deeper than just the girl who beat up on Rachel, or I feel like they have a deeper connection, and I feel more than just that girl.
At this point, I don't give a shit whatever character development they've gone through, because the fact that I mean, in this situation, I don't. The fact is that it's happened. The fact that your biggest bitch in high school is doing this. I don't care if they have been friends. I don't care if Santana's taken Rachel to the doctor's office. It's just, I don't care, because this person has done what they've done, and that's it for no explanation. I would be fed up, and Rachel's fed up and she moves out. I would be completely fed up and I would just leave, and that's what she's done. So I'm just really siding with Rachel on this, because I am just putting myself in that situation and thinking, how would I react? It would be the exact same way Rachel did. And she even just, definitely, she doesn't care. She just slaps Santana. She's had enough. Because those two characters have never actually had a huge fight. There's been some snarky remarks, but they've never actually had a fight. So it's about time, and I'm glad that Rachel's finally stood up for herself in a big way, and has just done it. She just has just said, fuck this, and just went.
I think everyone's made really super, super awesome points on this. I don't want to beat this dead horse, because it is extending into a much deeper conversation that we have time for today. We can continue this in the comments on Hypeable. That's a great way to get it going. I will give Natalie her last say, because she's dying to say it, and I know that I love her dearly enough to trust her with this. Go.
I very much agree with Jack, and I think that that would be a much more clear definition that the fandom and the viewers would be agreeing with if Rachel was a more sympathetic character, if she was a less neurotic character. We know her well enough to see that, but to people, because she's acting like a psychopath herself, and we know that that comes from some pretty freaking severe anxiety and I would say mental health issues, because she's insane basically. But I think that, yeah, if that was like a sympathetic, sweet girl that happened to, I would totally agree with Jack. I mean, I do agree with Jack, but I think the audience would totally agree with Jack. But because Rachel is such a difficult person, I think it comes across a bit less clearly, if that makes sense. But I know what Rachel's neuroses are. I know that she, how, you know, what she's like, and I do agree with that. But because, you know, Rachel has all of this anger and it's this delusions of grandeur and all of that kind of stuff that's expressed, it comes across a bit more of like an equal fight. But yeah, if what happened to Rachel happened to a sweet girl, you would be 100%, everyone would be agreeing with Jack, if you know what I mean.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so
I just see the good in I just think that everyone deserves their chance if they've been working hard for something. And Rachel has done that since she's been like 1 year old. So that's just how I see it. I agree that she's neurotic and crazy, but I just think that she's worked so hard, and to be kicked down like that is just, I would do the exact same thing Rachel would do. So that's just where I'm at.
She slapped a few people, Rachel.
She gives good slaps. Jeez.
All right, guys, so if you have more to say about this huge Rachel Santana feud, not on Glee Chat, but on Glee, you are more than welcome to start a conversation up on the Hypeable post for episode 72 of Glee Chat. I know that we all stay very close in tune with those comments, including Kyle this time around. I'm sure he'll check it out. So definitely go there if you're looking to throw your 5 cents into who you think was correct on Glee Chat as to who was correct in the Rachel Santana feud. That's very meta.
Feel free to give us money, too.
Yeah, I mean, give us 5 cents, too. That works. But I want to skip over this next thing really quick, because it's so much of a moot point. I mean, if anyone has anything really strong to say about this Tina and Artie speech-off, feel free to...
Oh, my God.
I mean, rip me a new one, Natalie, on why this is more important than I think it is, because it was just
it's
so...
Not,
thank
it's
you.
Not,
I mean, that's it,
it's
right?
Not, it's just I just loved... I just loved... I think that I found Figgins crying hilarious, but I agree with Sue in that it was a waste of everyone's time, and I hate them both. Like, it's seriously...
The best thing about that was Becky.
Oh, my God.
I hate Becky.
No, Becky, no. Becky, no. No, there's nothing good about Becky. Becky is a poor representation of a human being. She is just distastefully, horrifically
it's
sexual
kind of
and
really offensive.
Disgustingly
yeah.
mean. She just steps
it's
on people.
Funny.
She doesn't even have any human heart in her soul anymore. She hates everything. She hates everyone. What is she like anymore?
Kyle, unfortunately, Ryan Murphy has a habit of making really, really disgusting Down syndrome characters, like characters that have Down syndrome that act really badly. Mm. And it's like, he's done it in several shows, and it's a bit of a sore point, unfortunately. So...
In American Horror Story, he's touched... I mean, he has two Down syndrome characters that are main characters in... season one and season three. I wouldn't say that either one of them are anywhere near as disgusting as Becky is. They're much better characters, and if you're looking for any redemption, Natalie, in what Ryan Murphy has done, do watch American Horror Story, and do look forward to the character of Nan, especially in season three, okay. Of Coven, the witch storyline. She's probably one of the only legitimate witches.
No, yeah, I love her. She's good.
She's very awesome. Okay. So Natalie,
apparently there was some problem in Nip Tuck as well, like before. But yeah,
I understand that. That makes sense because I would trust you on that. I would say because I haven't watched that, but watching American Horror Story, I will have to defend Ryan Murphy a little bit. Actually, a lot, because he did very well with those two characters and not making them horrible, disgusting people and people that were very legitimate in their wants and needs. Unlike Becky, who just seems to care about hating on people and hurting them verbally and
making really gross.
Becky doesn't care. She doesn't care.
She makes really gross sexual references that no one who was not mentally handicapped in this show would say. It would be banned, if you know what I mean. If they said that, it wouldn't have the rating it has. But because it's coming from her and slightly garbled or whatever, they have it, and it's meant to be, like, less offensive or something. And it's, like, really aggressive, and her aggression kind of stresses me out. But anyway, but moving aside from Becky, yeah, that speech thing was a waste of everyone's time, and I hate them both. So,
Didn't care.
Yeah, and I think in general, it's just not really important anymore to us.
What was the point of that plot line?
Did we care who was first in the class before this episode? Like, was that like a built-up storyline? Because it wasn't.
It's a storyline that ends up
not really mattering.
Glorifying Blaine again.
Well, I want to tie that up. That part of that scene that Blaine ends up getting the valedictorian, and then somehow Artie and Tina tie for salutatorian. If that makes sense, I don't know. It doesn't, but this comes about as you know, Blaine's walking down the hallway like, I know it's making it seem like I get everything that I ever want, and I kind of do.
Their faces were incredible in that bit. I'm not going to lie. That was beautiful. But anyway, let's go back to the other thing.
Yes. Okay. So then we're all done with this Artie Tina's stupidity, and no one wins. They are neither eating their cake and having it too, however you would properly use that very odd phrase. Okay, so then Santana and Rachel's argument does continue on a little bit more, and I know that it is a very big thing for me to see Santana caring to cover up like a slap. It seems like she was wounded and hurt by the fact that Rachel had slapped her. To me, that when she was putting on that makeup, really hurt, and it felt like Rachel kicked dirt into her face by telling her, you can't use the same makeup room as me. That's where the star goes. Go up in the bathroom. But I think we've definitely killed that whole argument as much as we could on Glee Chat in a good way. So, and that's Mitchell's 5 cents. That's only 5 cents I needed in that whole argument. Okay, so then their director comes by and tells them that they need to be friends because they have people from Playbill.com, the New York Times, etc., there to create a really breaking story about the two friends from high school who both rose out of the same school and are now Broadway stars. So they start the song I'll Be Watching You, which is very, 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 very well done, just like Brave was. Natalie, do you want to give the song some more love?
Well, I hate the song.
I love the
song. The song is about a pedophile stalker in real life. Just so everyone knows, that is what that song is about. And so I just don't like the song, and I find it really weird whenever anyone uses it in like a romantic concept, or obviously this isn't romantic, but like if they use it in a romantic concept, or if they use it in any other context except for the original, which is that it was about a pedophile stalker, just so everyone knows. But it was beautifully choreographed. It looked incredible. Again, very smash. And I really liked it. And I kind of liked the scene with Peter Facinelli, him being, and I feel like that was quite realistic, that like, that if he had, you know, that story.
That was very smash. I'm liking this. You know, come on, Natalie. Actually, here's the thing, though. I almost want this Rachel Santana feud to continue the way it is, because it is so Catherine McPhee, Megan Hilty. It's amazing.
Well, do you remember all of the press about you know, Karen being the understudy for Uma Thurman's character as well, when she started, like, taking her around everywhere. It's like, oh, I'm best friends with my understudy when it was
yes,
going to be.
But this
you
is know, 10 times bigger because they're not celebrities, but they're best friends. So it's like they have
and
stronger
the thing,
connection.
I mean, and if they do want to both be famous or whatever, then I suppose, you know, it's kind of weird. But, yeah, I thought that was actually a really... really legitimate scene with the director, and again, I quite like him, but the scene was beautifully done.
I have a question for you about I'll Be Watching You. You seem to know a lot more about the song than all the rest of the co-hosts in this episode of Glee Chat. So this song is about someone stalking a child.
Okay, it's maybe not pedophilic specifically. I'm just trying to read the Wikipedia. I've heard a few things. It's definitely written as a stalker song. It's written as a...
Yeah.
An intentionally written as... Let me read you the quote from Sting. I've just opened Wikipedia. The lyrics are... like here, this is Wikipedia. The lyrics are the words of a sinister, controlling character who is watching every breath you take, every move you make. I woke up in the middle of the night and wrote that line in my head, sat down at the piano and had it written in half an hour. The tune itself is generic, an aggregate of hundreds of others, but the words are interesting. It sounds like a comforting love song. I didn't realize at the time how sinister it is. I was thinking of Big Brother, surveillance and control. So technically this is about Rachel kind of watching Santana for, you know, stalky stuff. But yeah, it is a very, it's a song that people think is very, like you said, people think it's like a, oh, I'm here for you song. It is not. It is a creepy song. And they did use it in a slightly like, oh, I'll be watching you, I'll be keeping my eye on you way in this, but it is even more sinister than that in real life.
Yes, okay. So now we have more clarification on that, and I mean, I guess it's a little bit more satisfying that it's not about pedophilia, but still it's about a stalker, so... so the whole Rachel Santana storyline... will end up with Rachel freaking out and telling Santana Kurt that she's moving out. She exits by ripping up a picture that Santana and Rachel had evidently taken during the graduation. Would have been a little bit more effective if we saw them take that picture. But that's, you know, kind of a moot point at this point because apparently that was supposed to matter a lot, meaning that they're no longer friends. Didn't know they were friends before in New York, but that's once again harkening back to our argument and a lot of confusion about the build-up to it and, you know, what Jack was saying, especially about everything else like that. So that's that, and Rachel's going to move out into the big scary world.
Where's she gonna go?
Yeah, I don't know, the gutter. She just is doing
Shelby.
It. I mean, she'll move into Finn's basement.
My god,
isn't that
where
Sam
say
is?
Shelby?
Oh my god.
Yeah, Shelby.
She can go live with her mother and Quinn and Puck's child.
That would be great.
Even more of a soap opera than it already is. But no, she's going to move into Finn's basement. You know why? Because it's where Sam is. She has a crush on Sam. Bam.
Well. But she's not. He's going to come to New York soon, and he's going to live with Artie in an apartment in Brooklyn where they both like go through all of these toils and troubles, like
I just
trying
can't
to navigate
wait.
New York.
Glee, she's going to go back to
Glee. Is just train wrecking itself. I mean, maybe it'll do like a quick scene where Rachel's voiceover is as she's, you know, dressed up in like.
To move back in.
No. I'm talking like she's cleaning up at a really cobwebbed up apartment, and she's like, "It may not be pretty bad right now, but I'm sure I can make this place sparkle."
Like,
and
they'd pay her enough for her to get her own apartment.
Oh yeah, well there you go.
Come on.
Excuse me. Have you seen Smash? They make like $200 a week when they're at, like workshopping a show. Like they don't make anything. Like that's the thing. It won't be till after she's like. Actually,
right. I have not
famous.
Seen Smash.
So yes, the gutter.
No, okay, trust me, it's not high paid until like, and that's the thing. She's acting like she's the shit, whereas this show hasn't even opened yet, and she should be acting like she should be worrying about every step she makes. And
you think
she
know
is,
that too?
I suppose she is with the understudy as well. Like she is actually, you know, that's why she is anxious. Like that's why she's being such a crazy about it. But
yeah, so Rachel, I hope you enjoy the homeless life. And I know that...
Oh my god!
No, I'm joking.
That's sad.
I can continue the joke by saying something in reference to Sam, but I will stop there.
Watch her, like, wake up in the subway and Beyonce is like, I woke up like this.
That's where this thing originates from? That's the... Okay. That's what is this? I woke up like this whole.
It's a Beyonce
internet
it's
macro.
Get with it,
from the new Beyonce album.
I don't know. It's really getting pretty
now.
Old.
I really just want to see her waking up and going, "I woke up like this."
That's the song.
Oh, that'd be so great.
Not a fan of Beyonce, but I bet they'll do EXO show sometime soon.
Okay, so they're bound to do another other than Halo because they haven't done another Beyonce song.
I would be very surprised if they didn't do another Beyonce.
What? I see a lot of the word Beyonce going around.
I mean, Beyonce.
Kyle, you go first, then Jack.
I'm sorry, Jack. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Kyle first.
I was just gonna say I highly expect them to do like a Beyonce themed episode at least in season 6 or something. With all the new Beyonce stuff coming out.
Oh, well, I mean, it wasn't completely around Beyonce, but they did the single ladies dance for the football. But they've done that many Beyonce songs.
Yeah, that was like a track, you're right. So they did do another Beyonce bit, so.
I think they will do it, so.
I think every cast member could pick a Beyonce song and do it fabulously.
They can do a Beyonce episode. I mean, Irreplaceable is, I think... very, very ripe for Glee's picking because that is that, you know, acoustic, I want to turn it into half acapella song that Glee does very well.
Oh, I want to say you...
Don't Stop Believing.
I really
want to
see Unique do a Beyonce song. That would be fantastic.
If I were a boy, but they've done
she
a
did
lot
do that for
oh,
a
boy. Oh, right.
You're tripping me up, Jack. I keep on making blanket statements that are wrong.
No, but they've already done, like, most of Beyonce's biggest hits as it is anyway. Like, they've done Crazy in Love, Bootylicious, Halo...
My Life is a Lie. I just said the worst the statement ever girls, that she's never done Beyonce Diva. Songs.
Are you looking at a list right now?
No, he just knows everything,
God.
Kyle. He is a genius. He knows anything that happened in any episode, the title, he is a fucking savant.
Are you being sarcastic? I can't tell.
I am not being sarcastic. He knows everything.
See, I want to say thank you, except it's kind of worrying for myself that I do know that.
Oh my god.
Anyway, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's okay because you know what, Natalie? You are often a savant in many ways on Glee, but...
I'm not criticizing him. It's just so intense.
No, it's awesome. I feel like this is a great combo. It's like the cosmos colliding and, you know, creating this super Glee computer brain that knows all of everything ever that ever happened on
the show.
We don't
have anything else to do in Australia except
oh.
learn about Glee.
Oh, no. Okay, guys, so...
A Disneyland to distract ourselves.
You don't have a Disneyland to distract your life.
Yeah, if you spent more time at, you know, if you spent less time at Disneyland, maybe you'd know more facts about
Glee. That's probably true.
That is true. I'd have to agree to that. Okay, guys, so I would like to wrap up this whole Star Child, Kurt, Becky, Blaine storyline in one sentence by saying Star Child and Kurt take a selfie where Star Child kisses Kurt on the cheek. That selfie is posted to Facebook or something to that extent. Becky finds that, goes up to Blaine and says, "Hey, look, your boyfriend broke up with you, and now he's with this new glamorous man." So
I think
that's the end of the episode, past a performance of the song Breakaway. So let's talk about first off.
I just think it's talking.
We've already talked about the Becky part, and I know that we've agreed. Too many voices.
I love not being on a mic that I can just talk over him in person.
Yes, that's great. So we've already talked about how Becky was, you know, kind of a biatch for doing what she did. Natalie's already talked about the fact that Kurt and Elliot may be flirting and may have done that selfie, you know, inherently to look like they're flirting. Maybe that can lead into a conversation that's new, though, Natalie, about, like, how Kurt's going to receive it now that it's more apparent and apparently
posted
on Facebook.
Yeah, I think they both think it's innocent. And,
they do.
And that now it's going to be like, what? But you guys kind of like each other. And they'll be like, no, we don't. And then it'll be like, oh, we do. Like, you know, I think they think it's completely innocent, and it is. It's a totally innocent picture.
Haven't
like,
they just played up the Klain drama enough already in this series, though?
I'm going to say this now. I do not think that Klain is endgame on this show by the end of season 6.
I think the biggest ones that obviously were Finchel, Britannia, and Klain, and Wemmer. Wemmer's already happening. Finchel can't happen anymore, and Ryan Murphy has no desire to get Britannia back together. So the last one we have to hold on to is Klain. So I think that it's going to be.
I don't know. I
no one cares about Will,
got,
so
I
no, I've got this feeling it's not. I don't know how I feel about that at this point.
It would just be like Ryan Murphy just saying like fuck you to the entire fan base.
I think that it's really you know, and I've heard some stuff about them apparently. Chris not really wanting it to be, so I don't know the exact truth. Obviously, I'm not an insider on Glee, but I'm saying now I do not think that Glenn will be endgame in the end of Glee, but
well, fair enough.
I don't know.
How can it not? Like, I don't know. Like, I think it has to be.
I don't know. I think that it's just, look, if this happens again, if this Star Child thing happens, which we kind of think it will be, how many freaking cheating dramas is this couple going to have? If a couple has this many cheating dramas, it might be a sign that they're not kind of meant to be. Like, and it just, look, I don't know. As I said, I wasn't sure about whether the whole I Believe in a Thing Called Love was a kind of serenade. I was like, is that just me shipping it? Because I do ship it. And then they had the bit at the end with Blaine being like, what the hell about the selfie? And I'm like, no, this is going to be a plot line. This is going to be a thing. So yeah, I don't know. I'm more focused on, I was more impressed with the Blaine, like, oh, I know it seems like I get everything. I'm a little Blaine of Blaindom. Like I am the king of my own little crazy Muppet universe where everyone loves me. And oh my God, I always get all this stuff. And Artie and Tina's faces were absolutely beautiful and perfect. And that it was like my favorite bit of the episode. Besides,
I wish we could
love.
Yes. Well, I wish we could insert Caitlin from last episode of Proper Glee Chat, not the Christmas special, right? We recapped that puppet episode and Puppet Master, and she had a lot to say about Blaine then. I feel like she would have a lot to say about your comment about it being his little puppet world where he gets everything, because that line was a continuation of Puppet Master. It really was. So it's funny how I'm...
Well, that's the thing. I think that with Blaine, and I think that with Tina, I think it happened with Tina as well. I feel like there are a lot of small aspects of the characters that were never intended to be large plot points, like Tina being a bit bitchy and Blaine being a bit delusional about himself, that have happened so much and that the fandom picked up on so much that the writers ended up actually focusing on them more. Like, I don't think the Tina bitch thing would have been focused on if people hadn't been like, isn't Tina being a bitch? Like, I don't think it was an intended plot arc until people started pointing it out. And I feel like the same, yeah. I feel like the same way about Blaine. I don't think they ever were going to make Blaine into like a joke character. I think they genuinely wanted you to like him. Like, I mean, not that I don't like him, but I think they genuinely were trying to make him like the hero, and then they realized that people saw his behavior as a total joke. Like, I got to wonder about what they're doing in there, but oh well.
Yes, the Glee writing room is a very strange place. We can all agree to that fact. But Jack, go ahead.
It just goes back to how like they sort of fixed their mistakes. Like, I mean, because everyone back in season 2 and 3, everyone was obsessed with Blaine and the whole Darren Chris and all that. So then they gave him everything. Now, like, two more seasons down the line, they realize he gets everything.
Jokes about how they gave him everything.
But now they give him more stuff because they think it's funny, and that's just, and people just realize. So then, it's just odd. I don't know what they're doing there.
And then, the last song they do. They just like Breakaway, Kelly Clarkson. I'm surprised.
I hate Kelly Clarkson so much.
Oh, I'm not a fan either, but I cannot believe it's taken so long for this song to be on the show.
Yeah,
like,
I think they would have done
this. This is the kind of
like
early, like these mid 90s pop that they used to have in like season 1. Yeah. And it just reminds me
of 2000s, right? No, this was 2000s.
Oh, I don't know. Late 90s, same thing.
Yeah, I mean, it does kind of blend together. Like, that Hilary Duff Pink era does really kind of like meld into one thing, NSYNC, you know, Backstreet Boys.
Yeah. It reminds me of the Princess Diaries 2, because this was the theme song for the Princess Diaries 2, Breakaway, and it annoys the fuck out of me, because I've read the entire Princess Diaries book series, and while Princess Diaries 2 is a very nice standalone movie that stars Chris Pine, it is not in any way close to anything that happens in the books, and so that annoys the ever-living hell out of me and will forever, so I am against this song.
See, to me, this is like the start of like my internet anything, because I this is totally just Mitch-centric, so forgive anyone else that doesn't care about this. But I only started, like, getting into, like, the YouTube community by uploading a music video I made to the song Breakaway by Kelly Clarkson. Yeah. I made a music video using clips from the video game Kingdom Hearts. It is the glitchiest thing you've ever watched. They're just, like, little... It's funny. You can probably just Google it and find it, but... And to me, it holds a really special place in my heart because of that. I don't know. So, to me, I think that this song was beautiful, but I can understand where everyone else would find it hokey as all hell.
I love Breakaway.
Sometimes I question why we're friends, Mitch.
I was like 14.
No, he made it yesterday.
I was once on a local flight from, like, Melbourne to Sydney, so, like, a small plane flight with Kelly Clarkson.
I would have just jumped off the plane.
What was she doing?
I really don't like Kelly Clarkson. All of her songs are just literally generic pop, whatever. Like you've got a verse, a catchy chorus with most typical things to say, like what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. You know, it's such a stupid thing to put, but it's so catchy and people can remember it. Then there's the same bridge back into maybe a little pre-chorus, back into the chorus ending. That's it. All of Kelly Clarkson's songs. She adds nothing to the pop music. I mean, even mainstream pop is complete crap anyway. It's stupid.
I mean, if you're trying to say that she doesn't add anything to what already is generic, then she doesn't. But she does.
I love her.
I like her a lot, Jack, because I think she revolutionized what American Idol and reality television can do for singing shows. But I just
hate mainstream pop music, and the fact that she even is there, she doesn't add anything. And
Jack, I think she's like 18, and when you're 28, you'll love One Direction.
Well,
I've got nothing against One Direction at the moment.
Pardon?
I've got nothing against One Direction at the moment. Yeah.
It's mainstream pop music. No, I will say something right now. His age, when I was 18, I was super, super, super snobby about music, and then I just genres sort of, when I was about 24 or 25, genres just started disappearing for me, and now I just like the most random shit. But I don't like the mainstream pop industry.
You guys
are
like
the artist. It's not the artist I have an issue with. It's the way the industry
you
works.
You two like
Kelly
don't
Clark-
like pop, and I grew up on Britney Spears and like. My first cassette tape was Britney Spears.
No, I only started liking pop music as like an adult.
Well, Natalie, I found that really interesting that you would say that you see genres disappear, because I'd have to agree to a certain extent with some of the artists that I like. Most of them are people who don't define themselves by one genre, and two examples of people that I like a lot, that people know a lot of by now, are Taylor Swift and, yes, Demi Lovato, because they both have... gone from one genre to another seamlessly and made it so that it's not like you're going to not like their new music, because it's like you like the artist, you like what they do, you like that they write music, you like, you know. I agree, Natalie, that there comes to be a time in your life, and I'm still just 21, I guess, so I haven't reached your 24 age, that you thought that, but there comes to be an age where you stop seeing or
just
caring what's popular. You stop giving a shit about a lot of what people think about you and how they would interpret the music you like. If you like it because of such an interview or such a artist or whatever, it's because of it, you're not part of the pop machine because you like something that isn't part of the pop.
I will say the pop machine is the problem. It's not the music and it's not the artists, it's the machine, it's the industry.
It is the machine
is the problem.
I
agree with that. Sorry, go on.
No, you go on, that's fine.
Well, my biggest I could probably talk about hours just because, like, music is like my number one, like, everything. But my biggest thing is that I compare a lot of pop music nowadays to music of the past, because, I mean, if you can see my room right now, I've got literally like a 300 CD collection, and I've still got heaps at home. And I just compare, like, I don't know, like, give me an artist, like Britney Spears. I compare, like, newer Britney Spears stuff to, like, The Doors and The Who and The Kinks and everyone back then. Like, I compare it, and it pisses me off that it's not the people around, like, my age, especially, like, my age at the moment, people I meet, don't recognize how good music once was and how it changed a lot of society in a way that it is not doing the same way it is now, if that makes sense. And that's my biggest thing. Like, it just annoys me that a lot of people don't see.
Yeah. Hold on a second, what? Jack. I have a quote, and I have to grab a book off my bookshelf, and I'm going to read you a quote, and it's going to blow your mind. Hang on.
And Jack, while she's doing that, I have one thing to say, not in an argument, but just in I guess, response to you saying that people don't recognize artists of the past as being good music anymore. Well, that could have been said for when those artists were in their time. People didn't recognize that they were good. They only recognized, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of a never-ending cycle that society and culture will change, and music will with it too, so that what's recognized as being good won't be recognized perhaps for years later.
Yeah, I understand that people, like, that songs and music can be so personal to people, and that's why they like it, and that's fine. That's, like, that's natural. That's just what music is. Like, that's just what it is. It affects people in different ways. It just annoys me that you can listen to a song on the radio and say, "Are You Going to Stay the Night?" doesn't mean "We're Bound for Life," whatever, from whatever that song is. I reckon I remember song.
Jack.
It's stupid lyrics. It's stupid lyrics, but you compare, Jack, like, just go back and listen to any Queen song. It's different.
Jack, listen to me. Jack, listen to me. I have one of my favorite novels. It's a book called Cool for Cats, and it's about a woman who starts working in the music magazine industry in the 70s. And there's a quote in it that a guy that she works with, who's like this brilliant, crazy, drug-addled journalist, says to her at one point, and he says, you know, blah, blah, something, and she goes, "He once told me that when music got too political and scary, too powerful, really, the corporates would start pumping it full of sex to stop people thinking too hard." And that is what happened to music in the 80s, just so you know.
That is
That's
exactly,
why the pop industry...
That is yeah. exactly
That's what, why... Yes, I that, told you yes. it was going to blow your mind. That's what happened to the pop industry. So,
yes,
yeah.
exactly.
Because it used to be... It used to be more like just enjoyment, like in the, you know, pre the 60s music, like pre-rock music was more for enjoyment and dance, and, you know, it was a pleasant thing. Then when people started using it as a tool, and it was not sexual either, and the pop kind of culture didn't exist, then when it became a tool of the youth, then it got too powerful, then it became the pop industry it is today. But we're not here to teach a college course on the progression of popular music, so,
Sex and music can be used to an event. So you look at Mick Jagger, he was, like, the biggest sex icon of that time, you know.
Mm.
And, like, but now every single person is a sex icon. You look at Kesha, she's got her tits out in every single song video that she's in, you know, and people just watch it because they think it's, they enjoy seeing sex all the time. And, yeah, I don't know.
It's okay. Kyle is like, "I enjoy
that." I'm like, okay. I love, oh man, the songs about sex are my favorite songs. Oh, that's why I love Kesha. She has a song about her wanting to bang her history teacher. It's like my favorite.
Oh, that's funny. Well, I mean, to each his own, guys, and we're all going to always, at the end of the day, like our own music, and Glee's a lot about melding together a lot of different genres all into one pretty little package, which really doesn't happen too often, if you ask me. So that's why I think Glee is pretty revolutionary in what it does, even if it's still a hot mess. It does do a lot to introduce you to artists.
It also sort of ignores genre. It does take from a lot of different places. And it might introduce people to various things, which is nice.
Yeah, I recognize I can be very arrogant about music, so I kind of apologize if
I come
across.
As I said, I'm not belittling you. I am more laughing at myself in that I used to be exactly like you, and now I'm just like.
It's not to belittle someone. Like, Natalie's looking down at you in not a looking down way, but I guess if I'm interpreting it correctly.
I'm laughing at myself.
She's laughing at herself because she saw her. She's seeing you in herself, and she's like, you know what? That makes sense for that age. I understand in that time in life and all that. And it's not exactly age. Well, it's just, you know, where you are and what generation you are. And it makes sense, and I agree. I'm so much more a part of your age too, Jack, that I can see where you're coming from. So it's interesting having the age gaps that we do sometimes on Glee Chat, and in the interpretations of music, and, you know, even plot lines on the show and things as far as dresses, you know. It's really cool to have the group that we do. Okay, guys, so we have talked about everything in the episode itself. We have some very big news to talk about. I mean, that's kind of natural to happen when you haven't podcasted in over 2 months for a very popular TV show. All right, so the first news story that we have is that there is going to be the 100th episode Phantasmagoria, where there will be redos of a lot of songs that even have already been redone, like Don't Stop Believing, because it's, you know, apparently not been done enough, and having been performed twice. And then there are also going to be some
three times.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, you're right. It has. Okay, four times. So now we're going to have Chase Crawford, of all people, Gwyneth Paltrow, Kristen Chenoweth, and all of the Season 1 New Directions on in this 100th episode. So get ready for a lot of nothing. I feel like it's going to be pretty popped full of sugar
and no plot.
Yeah,
is that it?
Diana Agron and Mark Salling have both said they're filming scenes together. If Quinn and Parker don't finally happen in this episode,
I'm going to throw my laptop. Oh my god, that is my end game. If Quinn and Parker not the end game, I agree. I'll be so angry.
Same. I'm going to cry.
They're so amazing.
And they make me cry so much. And I just, that needs to be like Puck is. Still my favorite. I think he's had the best development, and now they just don't know what to do with him, so they send him off. He had the most realistic development that never backpedaled, and Finn did as well. Like, Puck and Finn both did, but he means so much to me, and I could write you a college course about Puck. And yeah, if they screw him up before this show ends, I will never forgive them. But yeah, I would love them to, if they're filming scenes together, yes, please, please be endgame.
It has to happen, like,
Yes.
Well, I agree.
Get rid of Klein. If we have Puck and Quinn endgame, then we can get rid of Klein.
All right, that's fair enough. That's still pleasing to a lot of people out there. Not many, but...
I mean, Holly... So we've got Holly Holiday, who I always kind of liked with Gwyneth Paltrow, though it got a bit weird when she dated Will. And then Kristen Chenoweth. Did she date Will? Did they ever hook up?
No, they're just friends from the past, and they sang the song Fire and One Bell... Unless Door to Answer, that's pretty much.
She came over and like they had a weird.
She slept in his bed.
They slept in the same bed, but that's it.
And then Sue talked about how she photographed them doing that or something, right?
No, she left. She left like recording stuff in his apartment. That's how she.
Why? Yeah. What the hell is this show? Oh my god!
What the hell is this show?
Really.
Just look back at
that. Should be the Glee tagline. What the hell is this show?
Remember when that happened? Do we know when... Okay, like, here's an example of how it's changed. Do you remember how serious... Not seriously, but, like, the fake pregnancy, Terry's fake pregnancy, was handled quite dramatically in terms of, like, Will discovering it and what she was doing and why she was doing it. If that happened in, like, season 4, it would have been, like, treated as, like, a slapstick joke, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Yes,
it would have. Yeah. It would have been, like, a side scene that would have shown Terry taking off... her fake belly, and Will would have been like, oh, really? And then he would have been like, and then Ellen made her leave. And they would show her, like, tripping on her way out. I'm like, I'll get back at you, Will! And be like, see you later! And then it would flash back to him talking to Finn, or
I'm just remembering how, like, they had a fake pregnancy, and then I was remembering, like, how dramatic they actually made it. Do we know what role Chase Crawford has?
Yes, he's, gonna be... are we spoiling or not?
Go for it. It's fine. I mean,
His character is going to be Quinn's boyfriend or Quinn's love interest or something.
Yeah. So last time we heard, Quinn had a love interest in not only maybe kind of sort of Santana, but also her teacher. So is he meant to be that teacher in college?
No. He was a man. He was an old man. This is a new one.
Yeah, and then she says that they
Not
broke up or anything, but that just stopped happening.
So that just stopped happening, and she moved on to a new relationship, and that was that. All right.
And so that's 100. That's the 100th episode, and then it's the first part of the two-parter, which is 100 and New Directions. And the whole plot of these two episodes is apparently, I guess they don't win at Nationals. Spoiler alert. I guess they don't win at Nationals, because from interviews I've read, Sue seems
really spoilery?
Not really spoilery, but it's the whole plot is about Sue trying to end the Glee Club. About Sue trying to end
Glee Chat.
What?
Sue don't have no control over us. No, the whole plot of 100 and of New Directions, the two parters, and the whole ending at McKinley is apparently in terms of we don't know if the Glee Chat ends or not, but because there's going to be a time jump. But the whole plot line is Sue once and for all trying to end the Glee Chat because they haven't succeeded, I guess.
The Glee Club, Natalie. Glee Chat, you said it about five more times.
Sue ends the Glee Chat.
End the Glee Club because I guess they haven't performed well enough. And because Nationals happens before that, maybe they don't win at Nationals. This is me speculating, not... I don't know this for a fact. Because...
Wait,
I have to say, I would...
as a fan of Glee, like, I love Glee and I love watching Nationals and everything. It's just getting so old seeing the same formula over and over, and like another Nationals is just gonna feel so stale. Like, I love the idea of Sue being like, no, you're not going to Nationals, and then having to do something else.
I think they go on, Jack.
Is it confirmed that there's actually a time jump after the 100th episode? Because I didn't read anywhere, but you keep saying it, so I wasn't sure if there actually was going to be one.
I have read it in terms of, okay, basically, you know how the rest of the season is going to New York City?
Yeah.
That's going to... So basically we've got 100th episode, and then that's, I think, episode 12, and then episode 13 is called New Directions. And then that's the second half of like a two-parter that starts in the 100th. Then there is allegedly a time jump, and then the episode after that, which is called New York, that's when the show starts going to New York full time and is going to be set after their graduation and everything. So after everyone's
graduated. Yeah, I know all that, but do you know how much time they're jumping?
No, I read 2 months, but it might be wrong. I'll try and find where it is. But yeah, and then so that's, and then after that, it's going to be continuing on with the New York plot line, of which that other episode I mentioned is a part.
Yep. I'm so excited for them through the Friends opening theme.
Yeah.
So excited.
Well, Artie's in that scene.
How and why are they doing that?
It's going to be amazing.
It's going to be amazing, or is it not?
All of our people have come to New York, and then they do it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We've made a lot of comparisons to Friends on Glee Chat about Glee, haven't we?
I don't know.
We must have at this rate. Come on.
Maybe they're all Maybe Artie and Sam are gonna get an apartment in the same building as Rachel and Kirk.
Oh, there we go.
And Santana. Like, and it's gonna be all mishmashed, and they're all gonna move around.
And Santana.
Maybe it's someone like imagining that they're like all just gonna be best friends in New York, and it's just gonna be like.
And it's actually really crap. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen that Amber Riley's been filming a lot of scenes with them? Is she gonna move to New York?
She's definitely in the Nationals episode.
Didn't she have her own album? Like, she already got her own album out.
In the show.
I think she
thought, but Stevie Wonder's
amazing. Oh, yeah.
No, she stopped doing it because she didn't want to be nude or something or be photoshopped on the cover.
Right.
But with that, okay, she left school to say she was going to be an indie backup vocalist on an indie label. Next time we see that plot again is she has her own album. And she says that's why she left school.
Glee, what is this show? Remember? That's the tagline?
Anyway,
okay, so that was basically two news stories clumped into one, because we will have a time jump after the 100th episode's two-episode spectacular, in which there will be solely New York City scenes. We will no longer be in McKinley High at all. So,
How do you feel about that?
That's a big thing, and that's bigger than it should be.
It's amazing.
Because Glee doesn't really have, I don't think, the time to fool around with that stuff right now, but they're like, oh my god, we don't know what we're doing. I don't care. Just throw them all in New York City and just write everyone else off. I don't care anymore.
It's all about that.
See, I kind of wanted that.
I kind of wanted
the New York thing to be full time, but then I saw them posting filming pictures, and they posted like a picture of like the choir room, like stripped down, like breaking down the choir room set, and that was really depressing. Like, I was like,
is this going to be kind of like it's all about that choir room, but it's not, because it's those kids we met in the choir room? Is that,
always said that it's not about Ryan Murphy always used to say it's not about so much about the characters that come through, it's about the choir room and having Will and Sue fight all the time. He always used to say that. Now,
what
like,
a joke!
He's fucked himself up, and now we're here.
It's no longer that. It's not the choir room. It's being demolished. Come on, I mean.
But everyone connected to those characters so much, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, it will be really sad.
And in the end of the day, I don't know that there is going to be a good way to end Glee, because they've dug themselves into about 12 different ditches at the same time.
I feel like they've never, like, planned... many different shows have, like, planned where they're going to go, how many... Like, so many shows start off going, okay, I want this, 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 and this, and this to happen. Glee was like, all right, let's do a show! Yay! And then they're like, okay, let's go do... Oh, people don't like this.
It blew up. Like, it got so huge that they started catering to everything, and then now it's like
that was really bad. When they, The reason the first half of season one is so good is because they knew what they wanted to do and they wrote it in a bubble without any public reaction.
And they had one second season
all fan reaction based stuff, and they had to learn not to do that. They had to learn not to just react to everything the fandom wanted every second they said it.
Like Britannia, or
isn't that like TV 101? I feel like isn't that like a lesson that
you
most
keep
people
writing
learn?
In a bubble? You need to pretend you're still in the bubble.
Exactly. Like, I thought most people knew that already, but I guess Ryan Murphy did not.
I don't know.
Did J.K. Rowling write Harry Potter in a bubble? I mean, is it even possible to even do something as popular as Glee or Harry Potter in a bubble?
She wrote the first four books. Yeah, like sort of put it, didn't she?
Yeah, J.K. Rowling wrote the last chapter of the last book. Like, first. Not first, but, like, she had it done before the last book was
and knowing your end game before you are, before your bubble is popped, like Glee and Potter were, I think is important. So it's sad that Glee didn't take, you know, heed from, I mean, this is a very bad comparison, but what J.K. Rowling did,
there's no freaking comparison between Harry Potter and Glee.
Yeah, but I'm not making... No, stop. I'm making a comparison that there is no comparison between Ryan Murphy and J.K.
Well,
Rowling.
I don't know, if we want to talk about drama, J.K. Rowling said that, like...
Oh, well, after the fact, yeah.
What she said recently about Ron and Hermione.
Oh, no.
Okay.
No. We can't talk about Ron and Hermione.
No, we're not talking about that.
She said it was from outside influences, and I'm like, really? Oh, no, she said she wrote it as a form of wish fulfillment. I didn't know whether she meant that for herself. Like,
right.
For herself, or she meant from the audience.
I don't think anyone knows what it means. Either. I don't think she even knows what that means.
She has gone mad with power, just saying. She's gone mad with power. And she needs to take a sit back and just sit smugly in her castle and not say anything anymore.
I think in general, it's hard to write something and, like, have this thing in your mind and you're like, okay, I have this set, I want, like, this to happen. And then as you're producing it, as the work is still coming out and you're still finishing it, it's hard to have other people's opinions not affect your own unless you're, like, a million times committed to it.
I think you can change, but, like, Glee did it in such a terrible way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And that was its demise, it really was.
Oh my goodness. So, oh my goodness, I blanked out. I'm not an idiot, but what's the showrunner's name?
Yes, you are an idiot. What, the showrunner, Ryan Murphy.
Yes, I said it earlier in the podcast, so don't blame me. Anyway, Ryan Murphy is, like... is like George Lucas in the newer Star Wars. Like, people, there was just not someone to tell him no. There was no one there to guide him.
You can't tell him no. He's not a bad guy in his personal life, but as a worker,
creatively,
like, I've been to Paramount three times, and all of the staff there have said, like, you can't cross him. You can't.
If you say no to Ryan Murphy, you get in a car crash and get put in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Oh no.
No. Fact.
You do, like
what did
do,
Artie ever like... do?
No, Diana. That was Diana.
Quinn, that's
about
what
Quinn. About Quinn.
Diana. Didn't Artie get into a car accident?
He threw such shade at Diana on his other show, on The New Normal.
Yes,
as well,
the Bohemian one, yes.
Oh, yes.
He and Diana clearly had beef. I mean, it's good she's coming back for the 100, but, like, yeah, there was a time
I feel like if someone was there to, like, if someone at Fox, like, above Ryan Murphy was like, okay, you can't do this, you can't do this, then Glee would have turned out to be a far superior show than it is now. Not saying that Glee's, like, a shit show or anything, but, like, I'm just, like,
I have heard that they used to send over their episodes really late. So, like, you know, as in, oh, here's the final cut, like, the day before it was... gonna air,
but
so
South Park does that. That's the perfect example of how it can work.
And
how does South Park get away with it then?
Oh god, a South Park Glee episode. Anyway,
does that happen yet? Does that exist? It has to exist. Come on.
I don't know. It's just kind of weird. I mean, look, I don't know the exact situation with spoilers and stuff, but from what I'm seeing with the synopses that have been released, it sounds like that the McKinley portion of Glee is going to end with the Glee Club being disbanded. Like, that literally New Directions is not going to be a thing anymore. And it's like, that's kind of insane, like, that we've got a season and a half. Not even that we're not going to see it at McKinley, but the idea that it's not still there existing. Like, what's
Well, where's the direction of the show?
I want to cry.
Does Matthew Morris just, like, quit?
Like, literally, maybe the name of the show is completely pointless after that point.
Yeah, like, it's just weird.
Glee is about opening yourself up to joy. That's what it's about.
And it's about Glee Club, too, so it kind of fits both.
It's just really weird that it's not going to, the idea that, that it's, that New Directions is going to be over. Unless they end season 6 with, like...
Natalie, I feel like you've watched Heroes, or someone on this podcast right now has watched Heroes,
Heroes. Heroes is amazing.
Okay, guys, so I feel like Glee is going to take a really drastic turn a la Heroes, and...
Do a circus act?
No, not in a circus way. I'm talking about, like, when they go into the future and they see everything's really messed up and everyone's, like, an assassin and stuff. That's the only way I can see Glee even becoming interesting to me anymore, because it's just such a hot mess, and it feels like they're setting themselves up for something epic to, like, start killing off people or, like, have, like, something drastic. It's so wild and out there that you would kill off that many characters, basically, by cutting off the Glee Club and destroying that Glee Club room to not have, like, an ulterior motive to be like, and now we're in the future where it's, like, that special Christmas episode of Glee where everything was an alternate universe. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be something, like, extreme like that.
Yeah, at this point with Glee, I'm sort of just going with it. Like, I've learned not to be so... cut off about what it used to be. I'm now at this point. I'm just like,
throw me
whatever. I'm just gonna go with it.
Yeah, I'm fine with it, and I'm fine to see where it goes. It's just weird to think about. And I wonder if when it'll end, it'll be like how Dawson's Creek ended, with quite a far time jump of what everyone's doing now, or if it'll be like,
oh, I love those little time jumps. And Charmed did that as well. It was great.
A lot of people don't, though. A lot of people really don't, but I do.
I love them. It's like, look, when Charmed did it, like, they fast forward to, like, when all of the sisters had their, like, daughters and sons, and the family was all happy, and, like, when the episode ended, like, even though there's, like, a bunch of drama happened, and, like, you got to see everyone's storyline end, and, like, I feel like that's the ending that Glee should go for. They should go for the ending where, when the camera's panning out, everyone watching in, everyone who's been watching, is just this gigantic smile on their face. No matter what happened, no matter what, like, occurred, and whether or not you liked it or not, like the feeling it gives you when it ends should just give you this gigantic smile.
So Harry, Ron, and Hermione watch the children board the Hogwarts Express, and then we're good?
No, not that.
I think it's either going to end... with that, like, every single person who's ever been in the Glee Club all together in the room again is going to end like that, or it's going to end with Rachel at Finn's gravestone.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right, Jack.
That would be either very depressing. Oh, yikes. I mean, because that was supposed to be the end of the show. I mean, maybe Ryan Murphy did.
It was
supposed
to be.
Guys, hey, let's give him his J.K. Rowling credit where it's due, because he did plan the show in the end to have Rachel and Finn together, and that was the end. So, like, that's kind of... it's not like it's mean of us to say that he doesn't have an endgame, but we didn't realize that, and does that give our arguments any less credence now?
No, I know that he wanted that. It's not about having... It's not about... You can have an endgame. That's not a problem. You can have an endgame, and I never thought he didn't have an endgame. The very end scene is one thing. I'm talking about being influenced as you go about what you're writing at that time, if you know what I mean. It doesn't necessarily change your endgame, but it changes... It means that you're pandering to your audience.
It just changes
as opposed
to
having your own ideas.
Endgame.
Yeah. So the issue isn't so much the end game. The issue is more like at the moment whether you're pandering or whether you're actually, sticking to something you thought of yourself. Speaking of that, that's a good segue into my piece of news, which is one of the episodes that's going to happen after New York, after the shift completely to New York, is going to involve Kurt. Being involved in some way with a gay bashing, and we don't know exactly how, but there have been filming pictures released from them filming like a memorial, like, you know, those things on the street where there's like someone died here and they have candles and flowers and stuff. Like, apparently
there's flowers on the side.
Yeah, and
road,
a photograph. Yeah. So that happens, and he is all banged up, like he was involved in the fight, like perhaps he was defending someone else or something like that. And it's called, the episode's called Bash, and it's going to be allegedly about a gay bashing in some way that involves Kurt. And it's just interesting because back in the day, in 2010, it's a quote from Ryan Murphy where he said, "I'm not interested in Kurt being gay bashed. I'm interested in him being popular and confident and a role model." And, I mean, do you think that having this episode now takes away from that, like, takes away from the way Kurt was in high school and stuff? Or do you think, like, it's, like, appropriate to tackle that issue? Do you think it's appropriate to completely ignore that happens? You know, like, do you think that? Do you think this is hypocritical now, or do you think that
it's
a different situation? No,
I think it depends on how Kurt takes it. It's like, and like you, like you asked so like a lot of questions there, and I think it's fine. I think it's not gonna take back anything from Kurt in high school, because I think he would take it much more maturely and more actively now than he did in high school. And I think I think that it's not necessarily a bad thing that Ryan Murphy went back on what he said, because I feel like it's a thing that's still very relevant. And even though, like, Ryan Murphy said he never wanted Kurt to do that, back he said that, like, in 2010, like, back when Kurt was still kind of not as developed character as he is now. He's not someone as strong and as supportive. And people watching Kurt on the screen back then would see a defenseless high school kid getting bullied because he was gay, and he would be out seeking for help, and it'd kind of send the wrong message, kind of sending the message that, like, gay kids in high school who get bullied are, like they're defenseless and they don't have anyone. But I think now he's in college, it can send the message that if this happens to you, you can be proactive and you can be more mature about it. And I feel like the way that he takes this on would depend on how the episode goes.
Yeah, see, I agree. And just based purely on just the character in general, the character of Kurt, he's going to be a role model no matter what, just because of the character. But as well, the only way you can be a role model is to... Well, not role model. The only way that we can see a role model on TV is for somebody to get kicked down, like, get the I mean this in a, like, literal manner, metaphorically. You have to get kicked down, get dirt thrown on you, and then you rise up above that and... If we say that, that's him being a role model. So I think the only way he can be a role model as well is he's going to have to go through shit regardless, because it's TV.
I've got a feeling the episode is going to be more focused on, like, you know, activism. It doesn't seem like Kurt is the main focal point. It almost looks like he was defending someone else, which could be an interesting idea as well.
Hey, maybe he'll go to Russia.
Like they said.
Remember all that? Yeah.
Yeah, like they really said, lol. Okay, guys, so I know that this is running pretty late for, even as long as Glee Chat goes, we've had some episodes up to this length, but I'd like to stop it with
3 hours.
No, not quite three, almost two and a half. We're close.
When I first started, I was eating breakfast, now it's about lunchtime.
Yes. it's okay, no, it was an interesting talk, and we needed to have it because it was a very... informative episode.
My favorite part was our debates. I love.
We had fun
that
debates,
great.
And I mean, my favorite part was trying to, you know, circulate those debates upon points. But you guys did pretty good. Anyways, so we have one last bit of fun news. Lea Michele's album Louder will release on March 4th in the U.S. It's also available online. It kind of, sort of released in Germany.
It's released in Germany today.
Online,
if you're in Germany.
Yeah. She's releasing so many singles, like, all the time. The
first
album is
pretty much all out. I think they're all, like, they've all been previewed online. So if you want to listen to it,
it's out there. Like,
but
I'm
the
sure
it's probably on iTunes Radio or something.
Yeah, the official sale date's March 4. And I haven't heard any. Have you heard any?
I listened to one.
I heard one, yeah.
Well, in general, she has some very, very poppy, almost Celine Dion songs. Naturally.
It is very poppy.
And then she has some, what she even calls, Lea Michele songs. Most of the songs are written by, it seems, Sia, the artist from the Twilight soundtracks that I know.
Yeah, she worked with Sia. She's Australian.
Right, and that's the most I know about her album. There was a song released today, when this episode's going to be released at Glee Chat, that had her dedicating it completely to Corey Monteith and the last words that she said to her boyfriend. So it's going to be very emotional in that aspect. And it was delayed. The album was delayed, I know, from the summer because of his death. So it's going to be just as emotional as you would expect it to be. And I think that in general, she's going to have the generic pop songs that Jack doesn't seem to care for, but she will have some Lea Michele Broadway show tunes in too.
Cannonball isn't a very good song, but then she has a song called Battlefield, which actually is a really beautiful song.
Yes,
those are the only two I've really heard.
Was definitely critically acclaimed so far.
I'm a bit confused about how this is sort of being marketed. Like, is she trying to, like, break into the mainstream industry, or is it just sort of for her existing fans that it's just going to be the same as, like, what you said? Like,
I think it's just to say that she did it.
Like,
I think it's just to say...
listening, like, you know, like what you said, like Celine Dion style or like Broadway fans. Like, it's not actually competing as like a radio...
I don't think it's meant to. I think it's just meant to be like...
I think she's
Lea Michele could,
herself.
So she did.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She just was like, I have some free time and money to burn, so...
Yeah.
She's not trying to pull, like, a Beyonce. She's just doing this because she, like, can.
It's almost to the equivalent of, like, when a Disney Channel star will release an album and sometimes they hit, sometimes they miss, sometimes they're medium. I think this is going to hit a very, very solid medium. It's not going to be great on all songs.
Yeah.
But it won't
like,
be equivalent to, like...
She's been trying.
It'll be more like Hillary Duff than it is Selena Gomez.
Or even more appropriate. It'll be more like Demi Lovato's first albums as opposed to... I'd even say Selena Gomez's first albums. They weren't that hot. So, I mean, it gives her room to grow as, like, a pop artist. But who knows where this will end up Lea Michele in her career. But in general, I'm proud of her for finally getting this out. Aren't you guys?
Someone who... Pardon?
I'm just proud of Lea Michele for finally getting this out, because this is a big project for her.
I mean, I read that's the song, it's the last track on the album, the one that was released, said that If You Say So. Yeah, she said the lyrics, like, she wrote that with Sia, like, she did the lyrics, and, you know, she sat down with a writer and wrote it, and apparently it's all lyrics based on, like, conversations that her and Corey used to have, like, about the future and stuff, so that's super depressing. And
that's not okay.
Yeah.
Like, that's not okay.
But hey, let's end it on a happy note, guys. I mean, you're right that she has Cannonball, for instance. That's a very poppy song. And then she has Battlefield, which is a very instrumental song. And if you guys want to know more about it, just check it out yourself. There's only so much
and
we can tell you.
She's doing some sort of event. Like, I think she's doing... I don't imagine her ever going out and being a pop star. I can imagine her going back to the stage, you know, Broadway or whatever. And I can imagine doing concerts more like... you know, the way that performers do, like, cabaret-style concerts, but I don't think that she's going to try and compete in the pop market like
her. I don't think she has room to, because I think she has way too much still to do on Glee, so... regardless, this is an exciting movement for anyone a big fan of Lea Michele, like myself. I'll check it out. Maybe we'll give a little fun review of it, and maybe we should check out... just as much as we should have an episode dedicated just to random Glee plotlines that didn't happen, maybe we should dedicate it to reviewing all these musical endeavors that the artists have taken. Like Santana's Naya Rivera did a whole entire album that we did talk about once, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, Kevin McHale's just been cast in a new movie that I'm pretty stoked about, actually, as well.
Oh, cool.
So there's a lot we could do with that in the future. If you guys like that idea, give us a shout in the comments. And in general, if you want to get us, you can check out our Twitter handle and our Instagram that I don't know off the top of my head, but I'm sure you know them by now if you're listening that closely, and I'll put them in the show notes to cover my ground. All right, guys, so this is a long episode of Glee Chat. We had a lot of fun. I liked hosting it. Really different than... anything we've done before, because we had just a new, brand new host, Kyle, on. It was great having you here, Kyle.
It was fun.
And I can't wait to see how you guys are going to react to all of our great, awesome conversations. So, until next week's episode of Glee, this is Mitch signing off with... everyone!
Kyle! Hey!
Jack. Perfect!
Jack!
Awesome!
Natalie!
Okay, guys, have a great week. Bye!
Bye! Da 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 da.